Chapter 5. Draco Malfoy and the Path of Opposition. Year 5. With the Wizarding World distracted by Potter's declaration that the Dark Lord had returned, Draco was able to slink by his father unnoticed most days. His father was distracted as the rest of the world, but he knew that it was the obligations to the Dark Lord that kept him busy. The complete disrespect the Prophet went in means of discrediting Potter disgusted Draco. Anyone who'd been there when Potter returned with Diggory would have to see the truth in Potter's words. Not to mention it was Potter, of all people. Where was the belief in the boy who they placed on a pedestal all those years ago? What had surprised him was his father's reaction to the papers. It was as if he was pleased. Draco couldn't help but wonder why that might be. Wouldn't the Dark Lord be upset that the world wasn't taking the possibility of his return seriously? Unless that was what he wanted. The mystery of it all drove Draco mental trying to figure it out.
Master Draco!
Draco jerked in his chair as he looked towards the door. Normally households were required to announce themselves before speaking, but Elsie was barely standing as a hand clutched his ribs. Are you all right? The glare Elsie gave him had Draco biting his tongue. It wouldn't be smart to show the households a kindness that they didn't want.
Master Malfoy requests your presence.
Draco closed his eyes as he tried to mentally prepare himself. Whatever his father wanted, it wouldn't be good. Never was. I'll be right down. He hesitated as Elsie tried to turn around, but couldn't manage it without flinching. Would you like some help? Draco asked, knowing by the way Elsie straightened up that he'd made a mistake. Helping a house off was a grave insult. It's just that I could heal you. That way you wouldn't be in pain.
Elsie was punished, Master Draco. To raise the punishment would erase the lesson in the action.
Draco clenched his fist tightly. That wasn't right. It was a load of hogwash. But...
Elsie must be going, Master Draco. Chores to be done.
Elsie's tone was harsh, but Draco wasn't offended. It was hard to not treat all households as if they were Dobby. He watched Elsie disapparate away with a heavy heart. When Draco walked into his father's study, he tried not to flinch at the sneer that was already in place.
Anything you would like to tell me?
Loaded question. Draco would like to tell his father how awful, vain and conceited he was. But that wasn't what he meant. My grades have improved, Draco prompted, not sure what his father wanted from him. He had improved. However hard was to maintain his already high scores. His father's eyes narrowed, and Draco felt as if he was missing something.
Tell me, his father began,
arms crossing over his chest as he leaned back in his chair.
How long have you been dating Potter?
Dating? Draco was proud of the way his face showed a disgust he didn't feel.
I wouldn't date Potter.
An arched brow wasn't a good sign. Draco forced himself to remain calm as his father sat up straighter.
Your actions would suggest the opposite.
It was one dance, Draco argued, knowing full well that his father wouldn't like the interruption.
The Longbottom plan was going well, and I figured why not broaden that.
The silence that followed wasn't surprising. Draco came to expect the tactics his father would go to when it came to theatrics.
Is that something you think you can do?
Draco shook his head. He could suggest the same lie he had told his father when it came to Neville, could pretend that he would get close to Potter, but he couldn't do it. Draco wouldn't taint anything he had with Potter by pretending it was a lie.
Potter has friends. He doesn't need one in me. It was a fluke.
Angry silver eyes that Draco detested as much as his own narrowed.
Then what use are you?
Draco looked to the ground as he fought the urge to shake his head. Of course. His use only mattered when he could provide something for his father. The longer Draco stayed silent, the worse his anxiety got. Speaking would only anger his father, but not to do so would also raise the ire. It was a no-win situation. It always was.
What are your thoughts on Potter?
Draco was thankful he wasn't looking at his father, because his eyes widened and he felt his palms grow sweaty.
My thoughts? I didn't stutter, Draco. Yes, what are your thoughts on the boy? Especially considering his recent publicity stunt.
I think He was telling the truth, Draco whispered,
eyes still on the ground. He wasn't sure what kind of answer his father was expecting. Diggory's death was no accident. When his father said nothing, the temptation to look was too high to ignore. The narrow eyes weren't suspicious, but they were guarded.
You don't know?
Draco's brow furrowed, but he said nothing, not sure his father truly wanted an answer. Had something else happened? Something else beside the vents at the Triwizard Tournament? A small pleased smirk had Draco apprehensive.
Potter was expelled for using magic outside of Hogwarts.
Draco's head snapped up, eyebrows arched. The triumphant gleam to his father's eyes was ignored as his mind began to race. Expelled? Potter wasn't a show-off. If he used his magic, then it would have been needed. Something happened. Something bad.
Of course Potter does nothing if not fight, and a hearing has been announced. I've got it on good authority that Fudge will oversee it.
Fudge? Why would Fudge oversee a hearing regarding underage magic? Considering the stance the Ministry was taking on Potter, it would seem like a conflict of interest. Why not leave it up to the department head? What was Fudge's goal?
Do you think he'll win? Draco asked without thinking it through.
Absolutely.
His father leaned forward, hair falling forward as he ran a finger down his chin.
Dumbledore isn't going to let Potter become expelled. Not a chance.
Then why did he care? Draco didn't understand the point of the discussion. If Potter wasn't going to remain expelled, then what was the point?
As unexpected as it all is, it helps us in the long run.
Us. Draco wanted to scoff. When had anything his father ever done been inclusive? When had there ever been an us?
Potter's fame seems to hold a backlash. If his credibility is gone, then my plans will proceed accordingly.
Plans? He didn't like the sound of that, nor did he want to be a part of it either.
A time will come soon when you, too, will be involved.
Against Draco's better judgment, he whispered, involved? A cool smirk had Draco closing his eyes.
My status is regarded highly with the Dark Lord. I have used Draco. Something that you will gain, too, one day.
Draco didn't want to be of use. Not like that. Never like that.
When the time comes, you will join me, and that status will increase.
He said nothing. Couldn't speak with the bile threatening to come out.
For now, I need you on the sidelines. Any and all observations you make will be appreciated.
Draco knew an order when it was said.
Let's talk about your grades.
He looked towards the window as he tuned out his father's complaints. Draco had thought last year had been bad, but he got the feeling things were about to get worse. A lot worse. A familiar bark had Draco turning around to see Snuffles and Potter walking towards the train.
Hey, you, Draco said as he bent over to pet Snuffles. You look a lot better. Still so handsome.
When Draco looked up, the soft look on Potter's face took his breath away. Before he could say anything, Snuffles licked his cheek.
Gross.
I will have you know that I'll have to wash my face now. Another lick had Potter laughing loudly as Snuffles wagged his tail.
I hear your owner almost got expelled, Draco Foe whispered as Potter rolled his eyes.
He's pretty reckless, though, so I can understand that these kind of things happen.
You can just ask me if I'm okay, you know.
Draco ignored the smirk Potter sent him.
Are you, though?
I'm fine, Malfoy. He looked at Potter closely, trying to see if the sincerity in his voice was also in his eyes.
I don't think you are, Draco whispered as he took a small step forward, aware that some people were watching them closely.
Why is it you see what others don't?
No one is looking as closely as I am, Draco admitted reluctantly.
Potter appeared to be fighting a smile, and he wished that the knowledge didn't affect him.
Want to tell me why that is?
No.
Before Potter could respond, a group of people rushed towards them. The Weasley family, Lupin, Moody, and an old woman he didn't recognize.
There you are, Harry,
Weasley said, relief evident in his tone. He shook his head when he caught sight of Draco.
She'd have suspected you'd be with him.
What's that supposed to mean? Draco questioned, as Potter glared at Weasley.
It means that Harry...
It means nothing,
Harry interrupted Weasley, voice stern. Draco looked between them suspiciously. He didn't like being the only one not to know.
Draco?
He looked to Lupin and nodded respectfully.
Mr. Lupin.
Snuffles let out an odd noise as Lupin shook his head rapidly.
Lupin is fine. Mr. Lupin doesn't quite fit me.
How are you? Draco asked politely, as he wondered what it would take to get out of the conversation. Being nice was exhausting, especially when it came to people he wasn't friends with.
I'm all right, and you?
How are things at home? The question had Draco's shoulders tensing. The tone was just a bit too serious. He knew that Lupin meant well, but the one question had every adult looking at him in alarm. It wasn't Lupin's place to worry, and it certainly wasn't his place to care.
On that note, Draco began, as he looked at Potter one last time, I'll be leaving.
Draco, wait,
Lupin called after him.
I didn't mean...
Goodbye, Mr. Lupin.
When Draco entered the compartment Neville always chose, he paused at the entrance, unsure of how to proceed. Neville's eyes were wide and panicked as a girl that Draco had seen a few times in the past stared at him intently.
Strange. I'd expect experts, but you've got none. Not even the beginnings of some. You are quite impressive, Neville.
Thank you.
Neville scooted away slowly, and Draco couldn't help but snort. The glare Neville sent disappeared when he realised who it was, and his eyes quickly melted into relief that Draco hadn't ever seen on him before.
Draco, about time you got here.
Neville's eyes were doing an odd wide and then recede motion that Draco assumed was supposed to mean something. But it wasn't as if he was knowledgeable in silent cues of the desperate. He sat down next to Neville before looking to the girl. She was rather curious. Her long hair was free to her waist, one tangled in her hair as he assumed she tried to place it behind her ear. A necklace made of butterbeer caps, and she was reading a magazine upside down. When Draco leaned forward slightly, he realised she was reading the Quibbler, and everything clicked into place.
You're Luna Lovegood.
There wasn't much he knew about Lovegood. His father only had negative things to say about her father, but that was to be expected. Draco always did enjoy the Quibbler, though. It was a chance to forget his real issues as he read the wild articles that were published. Lovegood smiled before she nodded her head rapidly.
And you are Draco Malfoy. I've heard a lot about you.
Or negative, I presume.
Oh, no, Lovegood argued as her eyes lost the shine to them. The Raxperts like you, as well as the Nargles, but you can't always trust a Nargle.
She leaned forward before searching the compartment for others as she whispered,
They can be devious at times.
Devious?
He questioned, as he ignored Neville's confused glance. He knew Neville was probably wondering why he was going along with her at all, but Draco was intrigued by Lovegood.
They switch between being good and bad. Rather hard to keep up with at times. They lurk in areas that are tempting. My father says they are meant to be deciding factors.
Draco tilted his head to the side as he wondered if there was a deeper meaning to what she was saying. On the surface, it seemed like nonsense. But the words itself weren't mad. They were thought out. He wasn't sure about Lovegood, but he wanted to know more. While Draco mused silently, he could tell that Neville was getting antsy with the silence. When Lovegood resumed staring, Neville began rambling.
How was your summer? Mum was all right. My gran got ill and left me to myself mostly. It was rather nice. I did a lot of research for my own greenhouse. Did I tell you about that? How I want to have my own?
Yes, you've told me.
Draco pointed out funnily, not mentioning the dozens of times they'd had the same exact conversation.
I want it to be inclusive. You would think that herbology wouldn't have social constructs, but the exclusionary methods some people go to astound me.
Oh, yeah? Tell me.
Lovegood's eyes went back and forth between them, and Draco wasn't sure what to make of that. She seemed keenly aware of things, but her airy attitude pulled away from that.
Some herbologists refuse to take in plants from certain countries, and only because of origin and not because of death factor.
Death factor? Draco made a mental note to not step foot in any greenhouse of Neville's.
When I have my own, all plants will be welcome. I'll invite those stuffy herbologists and watch gleefully as they try and snub my plants.
That's rather Slytherin of you, Lovegood interrupted.
Thank you. Neville looked at Draco, with his face full of questions and his hands moving in uncertainty.
Draco's lip twitched when Lovegood stared at Neville before she sighed heavily. He wasn't sure what about Neville she was sighing for, but he was entertained.
What will you do when they snub them?
Lovegood asked intently, as if the question was of vital importance. Neville hesitated.
I guess feed them to my devil's snare.
Draco laughed, knowing full well that Neville would do no such thing. When Lovegood blinked rapidly, he wondered if the joke had fallen flat for her.
And not a single expert, she said more to herself than them. So strange. No nargles in sight either.
I was taking the piss,
Neville said, tone wary.
Oh.
Lovegood peered at Neville before frowning.
That explains it, then.
Before Draco could figure out what to say, Lovegood stood up and grabbed her bags.
I've got other places to be, but it was nice meeting you both.
You as well, Draco said politely, when Neville said nothing.
Don't let the Nargles influence you too much, Draco.
It had been a warning for sure. Draco just wasn't sure what exactly she was trying to hint at. What exactly was a Nargle? And how would it influence him?
If you ever leave me alone with her again, I will feed you to my plants, and I'm not kidding this time.
Neville warned, eyes serious but mouth twitching.
Well, gee.
Hand covering his heart.
What Nargle crawled up your ass today?
I was kidding, he cried when Neville started to tickle him.
Can't take a joke, I see. Maybe you have a Raxbert infestation too.
The compartment was filled with Draco's yells as he tried to get away from Neville. Maybe Nargles weren't so bad after all. As Draco listened to the Sorting Hat song, a sense of dread welled up. The hat was known for giving warnings, but only in times of need. Was it because of the Dark Lord? It couldn't be unrelated. That would be too big of a coincidence. It was clear by many of the students' faces that they weren't taking it seriously. Some looked to Potter, while others just frowned. Were they reconsidering their belief of his words? Realising that Potter's stance, coupled with the Sorting Hat, made more of a promising statement? Or were they wondering if it was separate? Was it a human thing to never notice what was right there? Or just stupidity? Before Draco could really delve into the thought deeper, he became distracted by the new defence against the Dark Arts teacher's speech. The longer she talked, the more he realised that things weren't going to end well. He wondered if his father knew about her. It could explain why his father seemed confident. As Umbridge talked about Chain and the things she aimed to improve, he couldn't help but frown. It was clear that she wasn't entering the year as a teacher, or someone who cared about teaching the next generation. No, she was concerned about the ministry. Or more importantly, the ministry's politics. It was a load of hogwash, all of it. When Draco looked around the room and noticed the distracted gazes, dozing faces, and complete disinterest, it reaffirmed his belief that he went to school with morons. Something was happening, and it wouldn't be good. Whatever Umbridge's goal was, it would end horribly. Draco looked at the Sorting Hat near McGonagall. Unity. That had been the main message of its warning. Was unity possible? It was strange. Draco would have taken theoretical lessons of Moody over practical ones in a heartbeat, but with Umbridge it was the opposite. Her goals weren't to educate them, but to give them only part of the information and see who could pass. Some things couldn't be learned with only the theory. She had to know that, right?
Using defensive spells?
Umbridge queried with a false laugh that irked Draco.
I can't imagine why you would want to use defensive spells in my class. Are you expecting to get attacked?
The logic was completely lost on Draco, as well as it did for Granger, who leaned away in shock.
He wasn't sure how Umbridge could expect them to only comprehend something without letting them practice.
We aren't going to use magic?
Weasley's incredulous tone had Draco rolling his eyes.
And you are?
Weasley. When Umbridge grinned and turned her back on him, Draco began to understand. Umbridge was far more dangerous than he had originally assumed. As Potter and Granger tried to voice their own questions, it was the same disinterested snubs. Umbridge was far from unbiased, and was taking the Ministry's interest too far.
You've been exposed to some very irresponsible wizards in this class,
Umbridge began, smile not matching her words.
Not to mention extremely dangerous half-breeds.
Draco's mouth parted as several people made outraged noises. It was one thing to criticize someone's teaching methods, schools, or even how they handled children, but to go that low and attack them based on being a magical creature.
Wow,
Draco whispered, loud enough that several people heard him, to think that people that ignorant existed. As a few students rose to Lupin's defense, Umbridge switched tactics and went after Moody.
My predecessor not only performed illegal curses in front of you, he actually performed them on you.
That was the only rational argument she had. Draco could understand her stance when it came to that criticism. It still baffled him that Dumbledore had allowed that kind of behaviour to happen.
Well, he turned out to be a maniac, didn't he?
Thomas piped up, anger coming through. Umbridge ignored him, clearly not able to handle other opinions well.
Theoretical knowledge will be more than sufficient to get you through your examinations. Which is the whole point, is it not? As long as you have studied the theory, there's no reason to think you won't pass the tests. Are you telling us that the first time using the spells will be during the test?
Parvati asked, eyebrows raised and a baffled expression on her face. Something Draco could relate to.
As long as you've studied the theory.
And what theory is going to do in the real world?
Potter asked, voice louder than necessary, eyes angry and narrowed. Umbridge regarded Potter for a long time, eyes unblinkingly weird.
This is school, Mr. Potter, not the real world.
Potter's hands lifted in the air as his expression showed his disbelief.
What about what's out there? How do you prepare for that?
There is nothing out there.
Draco could tell by the way Potter clenched his hands that that was the wrong thing to say.
Who do you think would want to harm children?
Potter began, tone mocking and condescending. Maybe Lord Voldemort? Draco couldn't withhold the flinch, nor did a few others as several people gasped, and Neville slipped off his stool. When Umbridge didn't become upset and actually looked pleased, Draco realised Potter had been baited. It was the hearing all over again. They were providing Potter the tools to hex himself. It was all rather clever, however devious it may be. As Umbridge began the lecture on whether the Dark Lord had returned or not, Draco kept his eyes on Potter. Each word she spoke resonated with Potter, negatively. When Potter argued back, tone angry, but the underlying pleading to be relieved, Draco wished that he wouldn't. He knew Potter was right, knew that the truth was there, but Umbridge wasn't the papers. She wasn't the daily prophet bedding gossip, nor was she students that disagreed with him. Umbridge had the power to back up her words. She was more of a threat than people realised, and Potter was playing right into her hands. So according to you, Cedric Diggory died of his own accord? The silence that followed wasn't stifling, but it was uncomfortable. Potter hadn't gone on record when it came to Diggory's death, other than the original statement, and he knew a lot of people were curious. Umbridge's smile fell. Something Draco was grateful for. It was a hideous smile.
His death was a tragic accident,
Umbridge said quietly, tone cold and angry, as if daring Potter to argue. She clearly didn't know who he was, because Potter loved to argue. It was murder, Potter whispered, voice barely reaching Draco's ears. Voldemort killed him, and you know it. Potter was shaking, and that alone had Draco wondering why people had a hard time believing him. It was clear that Potter was telling the truth. The proof was in his actions, words, and even his gestures. It came as no surprise when Umbridge kicked Potter out of the classroom. Of course, Potter didn't go demurely. He kicked a chair over on his way, and his anger was palpable. The silence that followed the door slamming was far more uncomfortable than expected. Students traded looks as whispers broke out.
Get back to the chapter,
Umbridge ordered. When no one said anything and went back to work easily, Draco knew fighting her would be difficult, especially if only Potter had the courage to speak up. Unity meant nothing if everyone was willing to let singularity rule in action. As Draco walked towards the greenhouses, he spotted Lovegood approaching Potter. He looked around for Neville and rolled his eyes when Neville dove behind Finnegan when he caught sight of her. Honestly, she wasn't that strange.
I believe he who must not be named is back, and I really believe you fought him and escaped.
Draco smirked when Potter's eyes widened, and he awkwardly thanked her. A few people began to laugh at Lovegood's appearance. Draco wasn't sure what they had a problem with, but it was just pettiness.
You can laugh, Lovegood misunderstood, but it's just like the blubbering humdigger and the crumple-horned snorkack. People used to think that they didn't exist.
A fondness Draco wasn't used to rose up, and he stepped forward as Granger spoke.
Well, they were right, weren't they? They don't exist.
When Lovegood gave her a withering look, Draco knew he would like her.
I don't know about that, Granger, Draco spoke up as he stopped next to Lovegood.
Draco, she beamed, so good to see you. How are the Nargles?
Draco grinned, unable to stop himself.
Positively tempting. He winked at her when her smile grew.
You aren't supposed to like them, Lovegood chided. Fickle things they are.
Rather fits me, I think.
A noise had Draco looking up. Potter was watching them closely, but his eyes were narrowed.
Malfoy. Potter.
They stared at each other, and Draco wished he knew what Potter's problem was. There seemed to be a discord since they last talked, and he didn't like it. Draco leaned forward and gestured as if he had a secret to tell.
You know, I believe you too.
When his voice carried over the small audience, he could hear a few gasps.
Is that so?
Potter arched a brow as his lips twitched.
It's the Raxbirds, Lovegood interrupted wisely. They give way to intelligence.
Draco shared an amused look with Potter before he looked to her.
Well, I always knew I was intelligent.
He ignored the snort Weasley released.
How about you tell me more about the humdinger and the snorkack?
Draco asked as he threw an arm around Lovegood's shoulder.
I am suddenly in the mood to learn something new.
They both ignored Granger's mumbled off,
but they aren't real,
as they walked by. Draco made sure to grab Neville's hand. No way was he going to listen to Lovegood without support.
I hate you,
Neville whispered.
You'll thank me one day.
Draco wasn't too sure about that, but he could pretend. By the way Neville sighed, he didn't think it was going over so well. He had a hunch that Lovegood and Neville would make great friends. All he had to do was convince Neville first. It couldn't be that hard, right?
Dear cousin, I learned today that Narcissa's having a boy. No names have been decided, so I'm afraid you must still put up with me calling you cousin. It makes it all real, doesn't it? Before, I was just writing to an idea, a placeholder for my thoughts, but you are so much more than that. You are my baby cousin, someone that I wish I could get to know. I could teach you a lot if given the chance. Chances are a lot like wishes. Sometimes they are only fitting in dreams, or only the lucky get them. I'm not lucky. When there's no wishes, then the realization of dreams take on a new meaning. If you aren't a dreamer, and wishes don't come true, and even chances have failed, then what is left? Where is the false sense of hope that I can delude myself into believing? Is there no security, even in my basest dreams? Hope without a place to take root is just an empty spot. An empty spot that gets filled with the unwanted. There's already so much to me that is unwanted, and I would give anything for even a moment of reprieve. Just one moment where I can think that maybe everything will be okay, or that I can come out of this unscathed. But that's not a delusion I can buy into. My outcome was decided when I joined ranks with a monster. My life was forfeit the moment I degraded others and chose to place my own blood status on a pedestal. There's no reprieve for the damned, and there's no standstill for the wicked. I will face punishment, either by the hands of those that I have wronged, or by the hands of a higher power that I'm not sure I believe in. The regret that I have is nothing compared to the suffering I have caused, and that alone won't save me. I am not sure I can ever be redeemed by the people who matter. My own thoughts and my own redemption mean nothing when my existence insults the victims. I pray by the time you read this that the world will have changed, even if it's just a little. I don't want the people who are dying to have done so in vain. I don't want their suffering to have meant nothing, and I don't want history to repeat itself. I just hope that my stupidity doesn't spread, that I will be the only foolish one to think that the Dark Lord was a saviour, when in reality he is nothing but an annihilator who seeks destruction shrouded in a grandeur of false progressiveness. What he aims to achieve is not what it seems. His goals will not save us. They will not unite the people. The Dark Lord will destroy us all without even trying. I know I must sound as if a repeating charm has been cast. I keep emphasizing the same points, but I'm not sorry for that. Not if I can cast doubt on your mind for even a moment. One of the biggest differences between light and dark wizards is not the magic in which they practice spells, but it's the credence of morals, the urge to stand up for not only their beliefs, but for others as well. I can't remember a time when a dark wizard stood up for their brethren and not for the status we all cling to. Can their agenda withstand if all that is keeping them afloat is fear? Can fear really provide the security that is required to succeed? I don't think so. There is no faith or trust when it comes to the ranks of a Death Eater. But trust is so strong inside light wizards. They not only trust their neighbour, but they build each other up. Such a sight is foreign to me, and I wish I understood their plight. I urge you to take notice of their actions. Build up those who not only need it, but those who are important to you. Even if that is all you take from the other side, then it was well worth it. My faith in humanity has disappeared, and I do not think I will ever find it. With these letters, I hope to find a humanity in you, cousin. I think that the next generation is going to be the deciding factor. They will either be our salvation or our damnation, and I worry for the outcome. I must go. A war with no end in sight keeps me busy. Stay strong and keep me in your thoughts, for you are always in mine. Love, Regulus. Draco frowned as he folded the latest letter and put it away. In the beginning, he thought that they might have been more informative than anything, but now he wasn't sure what Regulus's intentions were. It honestly appeared as if Regulus just needed someone to talk to. His heart ached at the thought that his cousin never had someone to turn to. He wasn't sure he could have had the mentality to stay strong without the support of Dobby and Neville. Sure, Neville wasn't aware of the letters, but that is to raise the comfort that they shared. Was that what Regulus meant? To build up others? Was mere friendship the answer? Or did it go further than that? Was Draco meant to build up those who looked down on him? That was asking a lot, and he wasn't sure he could do that. He bit his lip as he thought over the letter one last time. Regulus had said the next generation could be their salvation or damnation. The pressure was intense, but was it really up to them? Potter. He was a salvation if there ever were one. Did that make Draco the damnation? Or was he simply neither? Just someone on the sidelines rooting for the salvation? In the end, Draco knew that whatever he chose to do, it would never be the sidelines. No. He'd probably be in the middle of it all, and definitely a mess of worries. But that seemed to be his fate as of late. Worried. Draco looked curiously as the majority of his housemates in his year converged on the Quidditch pitch. It didn't make sense, considering they didn't have practice until later in the week. It wasn't until a flash of red robes took to the sky that it made sense. The Gryffindors were practicing. He made his way over, unsure if it would be better to go to the dorms and finish his homework. He honestly didn't feel like socialising, especially if it was in jest of others.
"Hey, Johnson! What's with that hairstyle, anyway?"
Pansy yelled, hands cupped over her mouth.
"Why would anyone want to look like they have worms on the top of their head?"
Johnson ignored her, but Draco was having a hard time in doing the same.
"Why?" Draco asked as soon as he was close enough.
You can't pick on her blood status, so you attack her appearance. And not just shallow reasons. Your words are bordering on racism. I thought only muggles did that. Not entirely true. He knew racism existed everywhere. It just wasn't something he saw often, not when most went after blood status.
Pansy's mouth parted before she crossed her arms.
What's wrong with you? You never used to have a problem like this. In case you have forgotten, you used to be the same.
Draco closed his eyes. He didn't need the reminder. It wasn't as if he would ever forget. Never be able to forget the hatred that used to leave his mouth.
I learned how to change. Don't give me that, Theo argued, coming to stand next to Pansy, whose mouth was pinched and clearly offended.
You changed all right, just not for the better.
Draco ran a hand through his hair as he shook his head. I didn't realize that treating others with human decency was a problem.
When Greg and Vincent frowned, and their brows furrowed, Draco knew that he had to try harder. People can change if given the chance.
What are you gaining?
Draco asked as he looked around at them.
Truly, what are you getting by behaving like this? You aren't gaining anyone's respect. You aren't doing anything productive. And you aren't even gaining their attention. Because they don't care. No one cares about your bigoted opinions. He glanced towards the Gryffindor team that were up high, but looking down curiously. So why spread them? Why attack in general? I honestly don't understand. Pansy looked down to the ground as her face reddened and so did her ears. Theo shifted uncomfortably. How about you think of what you are going to say and question if it's what you think or if it's what you've been taught? If you truly agree with the hate you are spreading, then I can't help you. But it's not too late to change. Draco turned his back, the action causing a few to gasp, but he was trusting them. Trusting that they would take his words to heart. He glanced over his shoulder and made eye contact with Potter, who he had known had been staring at him for a while. There was a lot he wanted to say to Potter, but it was better left unsaid, as were a lot of things.
Draco snatched the Daily Prophet from Neville's hands as soon as he saw the headline.
Excuse you,
Neville began hotly. Hands coming to his hips.
I was reading that.
No, you weren't. You only wanted to see if there was an expose on foreign herbology in the entertainment section. Hate to break it to you, but herbology will never count as entertainment. Neville began grumbling petulantly as he stabbed his porridge.
It's like you know me.
That caused Draco to roll his eyes, but he chose not to comment. Neville could be dramatic at times. Umbridge has been named High Inquisitor.
What's that? Sounds made up.
It is. Well, technically, it's a real position now. Draco hummed as he read the paper, eyes narrowing in thought. Says Dumbledore didn't fill the position. No wonder they chose someone like her, then. When the paper quoted his father, Draco's fingers clenched. I feel much better in my mind now that I know that Dumbledore has been subjected to fair and objective evaluation, said Mr. Lucius Malfoy, 41. Many of us, with our children's best interests at heart, have been concerned about some of Dumbledore's eccentric decisions in the last few years, and would be glad to know that the Ministry is keeping an eye on the situation. Our children's best interests, Draco repeated, as the paper ripped in his hands. Draco? Right. Draco laughed, the sound hysterical to his own ears. Because if he cared about my best interests, he wouldn't be who he is. If he actually gave a damn, he wouldn't have pledged his life to a monster. Draco, I'm so tired, Neville. Tired of trying so hard to be a better person, and he just sits there with his ignorant beliefs and the papers eat it up. Sure, anyone with a brain knows what he's like. But he reaps the benefit of his crimes, and I'm just so sick of it. It was the platform mentality all over again. His father was granted a platform to spew his beliefs, and it was working. Society being as impressionable as they were, made his father's plans easy. But Draco... He looked down to the torn pages of the paper, and couldn't help but wonder if it was an omen. Would he be split in the same way when his father demands a certain route? Would he be torn as easy as a newspaper? Or would he have a backbone somewhere?
Draco, you aren't his sins.
The sentiment was nice, but Draco couldn't help but feel like somewhere the distinction didn't matter. There would always be people who wouldn't think like Neville, but it was nice that someone bothered to try at all. Draco looked up and smiled sadly at Neville. The son of a sinner is...
just the son, that's all.
The hard quality to Neville's tone and the determination in his eyes had Draco reaching forward to grip Neville's hand in gratitude. Thank you. As they sat across from each other, Draco took a moment to marvel over his friendship with Neville. Neville added something to Draco's life that he never wanted to be without. The friendship, wisdom, and general enjoyment meant everything to him. Neville made the frustration of the world bearable, and he would do anything to make sure that went both ways.
Anything.
Umbridge expecting classes might have seemed entertaining to some students, but Draco didn't like it. Didn't like the way she postured herself as better than everyone else. Better than the professors he'd been teaching for years. When Draco made it to Care of Magical Creatures and noticed Umbridge with the clipboard, he couldn't help but groan. It was bad enough having to see her for Defense Against the Dark Arts. But during other lessons too? The lesson was supposed to be on bow truckles, but it was hard to focus with Umbridge's questions.
You don't normally teach this class, do you?
Professor Gobby Plank nodded distractedly as she corrected Patil's hold on the bow truckles.
Correct. I'm just the substitute teacher filling in for Professor Hagrid.
Draco narrowed his eyes when Umbridge began scribbling. There was a smirk edging on her face, and he knew that was a bad sign.
The headmaster seemed reluctant to offer any information. I wonder if you might know where Hagrid might be, or what is causing his extended absence?
The question was asked in a way that was supposed to be uninterested, but her beady eyes were alight with nothing but interest, and Draco wondered how anyone could be fooled by her.
Afraid I can't. Don't know much more than has been said, although I expect you know more than me. I received an owl from Dumbledore, and here I am.
Gobby Plank walked around the clearing and began answering questions, effectively stopping any further questions from Umbridge. It was a subtle tactic, and Draco rather admired that. At least until Umbridge began to question the students instead. For the most part, it was clear that the students didn't want to say anything bad about Hagrid. He listened in amusement as Brown explained how eccentric the blast-ended Scroots were, and how they made her glad to partake in the course. He wasn't entirely sure he would have been able to lie as well as her, if that had been him.
Now I hear there have been injuries in this class.
Draco looked around, hoping that Umbridge didn't already know the answer to that. But when Greg grinned a horrible smile on his face, a sinking feeling took root.
That was me, he said,
unable to allow Greg to make it seem worse than it was. He could see Greg frown, and he knew that his actions weren't making sense to Greg. But there wasn't much else he could do to show that he wasn't the person Greg used to know.
A hippogriff slashed me.
Umbridge appeared worried. A small frown marred her features, but the pleased glint to her eyes contradicted everything.
A hippogriff?
Draco felt eyes on him, and he glanced until he noticed the intensity to Potter's stare.
Yeah,
Draco agreed, eyes still on Potter.
I didn't listen to Hagrid's instructions, ended up insulting the hippogriff. My fault, really.
Whispers broke out as Umbridge placed her clipboard on her hip and eyed him closely. He knew that she expected a different answer. It was obvious she knew what had happened, and with who his father was, it was clear she wanted him to give an answer that would fit her crusade. And a crusade it was.
Well,
Umbridge said, tone barely above a whisper, but it echoed around the clearing.
I think that's all I need here, Professor Grubby Plank.
Her eyes were still on Draco, and despite the urge to look away, he wouldn't. Not when he needed to say as much as he could silently.
You will be receiving the result of your inspection in the next few days.
Jolly good.
As Umbridge turned to leave, Draco wondered if Grubbly Plank's comment was ironic in the foreboding notion that nothing so far in the year had been jolly good. Nothing. Draco sat on the log he liked to think was his as he stared at the Black Lake. It was difficult to find time to do nothing, what with increased homework load and the extra care he had to put into studying. If Umbridge was a competent teacher, he wouldn't have to study as hard. Malfoy. Draco jumped slightly before he scowled up at Potter's smiling face.
Was that necessary?
Potter's smile turned soft, and Draco's anger fizzled down at the sight. I like messing with you.
Pratt.
He hated how fond his voice was when it came to Potter. Neville said you'd be out here. Draco hummed as he looked back to the lake.
And why were you looking for me?
When Potter didn't say anything, Draco glanced at him, surprised to see a flush on his cheeks.
The thing is, well, it's Hermione's doing. Ron's too, I suppose.
They think that Umbridge is a rotten teacher.
I would have to agree with them, Draco commented, annoyed that they were in agreement at all.
And they got this idea in their heads that I would make a better teacher, an idea that I don't agree with. But we are tired of nothing being done in the lessons, and even the books make a better teacher.
Potter rambling would always make Draco smile.
He watched the way the flush grew, and he wondered if Potter realised how endearing it was. They think that I can offer something that she can't. And I suppose compared to her, then I wouldn't make a bad teacher. Though I'm not really qualified, you know. I'm just a teenager, really. What do I know?
I think you know a lot.
As the flush darkened, Draco felt his own cheeks heat up. Potter looked at him, and he wished the awed look wasn't there. It wasn't fair that one look from Potter could turn his stomach to mush.
Do you want to go?
Draco furrowed his brows.
To what? Your lessons?
Potter nodded his head, the hair falling forward, and Draco itched to put it in place.
Yeah, the first meeting is this weekend. Hermione said she has a few people who want to learn.
Draco bit his lip before he looked down at the ground.
He wanted to learn. Wanted to actually do something for defense against the dark arts.
But was this what he wanted?
It wasn't as if he thought Potter would make a bad teacher. Not when one looked at everything Potter had done, but it was a bold move.
It was a new path all over again. If he took Potter's lesson, it would be one more step towards making a stance, and Draco wasn't sure it was the right time to do so. Was he prepared for the consequences should it be found out? If he was to take the lessons and it later be discovered by his father, then Draco wouldn't be able to come back from that. There would be no saving grace. Draco clasped his hands together as his mind whirled. If he went, he'd have to face the opinions of others, the opinions of students who didn't know him, didn't know who he really was. No one Potter invited would be willing to see a different side of him. He wasn't sure he wanted to deal with the drama it would bring. Wasn't sure it would be worth it.
I want to, he whispered, but I can't.
There was a moment of silence before Potter spoke up.
Why?
I don't think I'm ready.
Ready for what?
Draco looked up and wheeled Potter to understand.
If I go, I can't come back from that.
Potter's forehead wrinkled and a small frown formed.
So? Then don't come back. Go forward.
It's not that easy. When Potter scoffed, he wanted to hex the bloody git.
Yes, it is.
Draco threw his hands up in frustration.
Maybe for you. Maybe for someone who has always been good, but I'm not like you. I have to actively work at being who I am, Potter. You are asking a lot of me.
Potter stood up, his hands lifting to run through his hair.
No, I'm not. I'm asking you to be brave and take the damn lessons.
Brave. Draco laughed hollowly. Watched as Potter flinched at the sound.
Brave?
He shook his head.
You rebel against everything you have ever known and tell me that that isn't brave.
Malfoy,
you ignore everything your family has ever told you and tell me that isn't brave.
Potter opened his mouth, but Draco stood up, anger ruling his actions.
You look at who you are and realize it's not good, rotten even, and then try and change who you are and tell me that isn't brave.
Draco shook his head when Potter raised the hand as if to touch, but Draco took a step back.
You don't get to judge me. You don't get to act like my progress isn't enough. I'm not you. I'm never going to be good. I'm never going to be someone as light or as worthy as you.
That's... And I've accepted that, Draco whispered as he turned his back. Turned his back on more than just Potter.
I've accepted who I am and my own choices.
It'd be at my own pace, and if that's not good enough for you, then go fuck yourself.
Draco.
Don't, Draco begged.
Don't go there. Why do you have to make everything so bloody difficult?
A hand on his shoulder had Draco slumping under the weight of everything.
I'm sorry. He knew Potter was sorry for more than just the direction their conversation had taken. But was it enough? Was anything enough? Me too. Only Draco wasn't sure what he was sorry for anymore. With the weight of the world on his shoulders, he was beginning to grow numb to it all. What did apologies matter in the end, anyway?
I'm going to miss you.
What are you on about? Draco asked as he fought the urge to look at Neville. He wanted to continue to watch the clouds. They were on their backs on the Quidditch pitch, looking at the sky. We see each other every day.
I know,
Neville sighed.
But I was looking forward to doing Harry's lessons with you.
Draco shifted uncomfortably. It was one thing to disappoint Potter, but Neville too. Part of him felt as if he was being left behind. Days that mattered would be in Potter's stupid club. Even Neville. Neville.
No, don't apologise.
He looked to the side and sighed at the serious look Neville gave him.
I almost told Harry no.
Draco narrowed his eyes suspiciously. Why would you do that? It didn't make sense for Neville to turn down the chance to be actually learning something for defence against the dark arts.
I didn't want to go if you weren't going to.
And what changed your mind? He refused to let warmth fill him at Neville's words. Neville smiled brightly as he flopped on the ground more firmly.
I figured if you couldn't go to the lessons, then I could bring the lessons to you.
What does that mean? He was honestly a little worried. Neville's plans aren't always the best.
I'll teach you whatever Harry teaches me.
Draco knew that Neville had a hard time with lessons as it was, but he couldn't look into the excited eyes and offer anything but an affirmative. If Neville wanted to teach him, then who was he to deny that? All right, teach me. The sound of Neville's excited whoop was the only warning Draco had to prepare himself before he was manhandled into an upright position and pulled into a hug. Perhaps being left behind wouldn't be so bad after all. Draco was used to the dirty passageway that he'd liked to consider his go-to spot for conversations with Dobby. The rock was still uncomfortable, but it was better than the floor.
Dobby said to Winky that the soup needed to be tasted first, but Winky wasn't listening.
What was she doing?
Winky was drinking more butterbeer!
Dobby yelled far louder than necessary as he clapped his hands for emphasis. Draco frowned as he placed his chin in the palm of his hand. Why? You said she had one bottle already. Any past that, and it reaches toxic level for a house elf. Dobby's ears drooped as he looked to the ground.
Winky be knowing, Draco. She doesn't care. Misses her old master.
An ugly, uncomfortable feeling took root in his stomach at the thought. It wasn't uncommon for house elves to go unhinged if released from servitude. He knew Winky wouldn't be the first to drown her worries in butterbeer, but the reason for it at all angered him. House elves shouldn't have been in servitude in the first place, let alone be shamed when let go. And the other house elves? How are they treating her?
Winky is pitied.
Draco sighed as he tried not to become angry with them. He knew it would take a lot to change the world. He just wished it wasn't so daunting. And you? How are they treating you? When Dobby said nothing, Draco frowned. Are you all right? He asked as Dobby's shoulders shook slightly. Dobby tried to smile, but it looked more like a grimace to Draco.
Dobby is fine.
Draco knew a lie when faced with one. He'd been raised with them all his life. He opened his arms and smiled sadly when Dobby rushed forward and hugged him tightly.
Dobby is not fine,
Dobby whispered into Draco's stomach.
They don't understand.
What don't they understand? Draco's heart broke as Dobby tried to wipe his eyes on his uniform.
Freedom. They don't understand what it's like for Dobby. Dobby gets to choose what he wants, and Dobby likes it.
He wasn't sure what to say. He knew it wasn't exactly the other house elves' fault for thinking the way they did, but it wasn't okay to make Dobby feel excluded.
Dobby doesn't blame them,
Dobby said, voice tinged with a sadness that Draco could empathize with, but not understand. Not on a deeper level, and not with personal experience. You have a heart worth praising,
Draco whispered. He couldn't go through Dobby's experiences and still be happy, still be positive.
Dobby learned from Draco.
He blinked rapidly as a shame filled him. Draco wasn't the person Dobby saw, wasn't someone worth being praised, nor was he worth the adoration and large eyes that blinked up at him. I disagree.
Draco needs to be quiet,
Dobby scolded as he stepped back and crossed his arms. Draco smiled slightly but said nothing. Dobby would push the issue of challenge. What else have you been up to? Draco asked, desperate to change the subject.
Dobby has been seeing Harry Potter.
Oh? Draco tried to appear disinterested, but Dobby's ears wiggled and his nose scrunched up.
Harry Potter is in need of help. Dobby can tell, but Dobby hasn't offered.
And you think that is wise? Draco teased as he leaned away from a playful slap from Dobby. Your ideas nearly get him killed, you know. Determination filled Dobby's eyes, and he knew that nothing would deter Dobby. Sense had already vanished.
Dobby will help Harry Potter.
It was a declaration of sorts, and he knew better than to argue. Then go. Draco ushered him out with a wave. Help Potter. Merlin knows he needs it. They all did.
And there was this flick of the wrist movement that Harry showed me too. But I'm not sure it really was all that special. Honestly, it looked like he was having a muscle spasm. Oi! Are you even listening to me?
Draco hummed in agreement as he looked around the room Neville brought him to. Where are we?
The room of requirement. I guess Dobby showed it to Harry.
Draco smiled, glad that Dobby had been able to help after all.
I knew you weren't listening to me.
Sorry, Draco apologised, but he wasn't really that sorry. Tell me again. Neville huffed, seemingly put out.
Harry taught us this arming charm. I was talking about his wrist flicks.
Draco arched a brow and laughed when Neville went red in the face.
Not like that, you wanker. I meant his wand flicks.
Draco bit his lip to stop from further laughing. He had to run when Neville narrowed his eyes. He knew what that look meant.
All right, all right, Draco cried as Neville came closer. I was just kidding. Please teach me, O wise one.
That's acceptable,
Neville grumbled as he straightened his robes.
Wise and charming would have been preferred, but I'll take what I can get.
Draco felt his eyes twitch in annoyance, but he said nothing and focused on the proper wand placement Neville was showing him.
I'm still unsure Harry's wrist movements need to be so emphasized, but it works for him.
Neville shrugged once and continued to practice the movement. When Neville said the spell and nothing happened, Draco narrowed his eyes. Move your wrist slower and say it again. Neville did as asked, and this time his wand lit up, and a spark of red shot out.
Oh!
Neville exclaimed, eyes wide and bright.
Not quite the actual spell, but it's better than before.
Draco furrowed his brows as he tried to understand.
You said Potter's movements were more intricate.
Hermione's too.
Not all spells require precise wand movements.
I know that.
Draco ignored the defensive tone as he tried not to lose focus.
Sometimes it depends on the maturity level of your magical core.
Yes, I am aware. I have been taking the same classes as you for years.
Draco rolled his eyes. Sometimes he wondered how much of Neville's personality had been shaped by him.
Which means that your hand movements aren't going to be the same as Potter's. You have to find your own centre, your own way of practicing the spell.
But it's a defensive spell. That should require it to be precise.
It's offensive too. Disarming someone is just as much of a defence for you as it is a hindrance to them.
Neville looked down to his wand, clearly lost in thought.
I just have to keep practising.
Exactly.
When Neville suddenly grinned, Draco took a wary step backwards.
You know,
Neville began, tone teasing.
You'd make a good teacher too.
Draco rolled his eyes.
I'm no teacher, Neville, just an observer.
One of these days, I'm gonna get you to see what I see when I look at you.
And what do you see?
Neville smiled softly.
Everything.
I think you are just biased. Draco looked to the ground as his face pinked up.
Perhaps, but that doesn't make it any less true. And one day you'll see it too.
And if that day is far away, Neville's smile grew wider.
Then I'll see it for you.
Perhaps Neville was right. Maybe one day he would see that too. One day. When Draco walked towards the lake, he wasn't surprised to see Potter sitting on the log he liked to think was his. What's on your mind today? Umbridge still giving you issues? Potter snorted derisively. Always. Draco sat down next to him, eyes on the lake, wishing that he felt as serene as the still water. I just wanted to talk to you.
Oh? How come?
Do I need a reason to talk to you? You always have before, Draco pointed out, tone light but curious. Potter said nothing, but Draco wasn't bothered by the silence, not when his life sometimes seemed anything but. Can you see the Thestrals? Draco tilted his head back in surprise as his eyes widened.
No.
Potter's shoulders slumped, but he didn't seem to have expected a different answer. Part of me hates them. The omittance had Draco wary of the conversation that would arise. He wasn't good at being someone else's comfort, nor was he sure he was the right person for the job. To see them means to see death, and I wish my experiences had never granted me that sight. But they aren't doing anything but being who they are, you know. He'd never given much thought to Thestrals, but he was curious to hear what Potter thought. Draco wasn't sure he would ever want to see them. They remind me of myself.
How so?
Potter tilted his head back and looked up at the sky. They know darkness. Their existence brings debate. Those who will vilify them and condemn them one minute, but then use them for their own benefit the next. They are an omen, a bad symbol among society, and yet people can't stop talking about them. Draco felt uncomfortable with the similarities. Was that really what Potter thought? Society treats me the same way. I never know who they expect me to be, never know what image I am to live up to. Am I the omen they want to paint me as? Or am I just living by my own credence? I honestly don't know any more.
What do you want? Draco asked. That's what's important.
A bitter smile had Draco's stomach lurching. I don't think it matters much what I want any more.
It should, Draco argued. What you want should matter.
Maybe in a perfect world. A world with no strife or horrible people. Draco wanted to continue with his point. Wanted to tell Potter that he could still do what he wanted, but the hypocrisy burned his throat. He understood what Potter meant. Understood exactly why doing what one wanted didn't always pan out.
What else happens in a perfect world?
Potter smiled sadly as he looked at Draco. Anything you want.
Anything?
Anything. Potter's grin grew, and Draco wished he could make that a reality, make a world that would always have such an innocence to it. Potter's smile dimmed a little, and Draco knew that all good things end at some point. They have to. Did you know that Luna can see the Thestrals? Draco hummed as he shook his head.
Most of our conversations revolve around Nargles, to be honest.
An odd look appeared on Potter's face. He wasn't sure what to make of it. What exactly is an Nargle?
Your guess is as good as mine, Draco said with a laugh and a fond smile. It wouldn't surprise me if Lovegood was the wisest one out of all of us.
Potter's brows merged as a doubtful expression caused Draco to laugh.
No, Draco continued. She's brilliant, just not in the way one would expect.
Brilliant? Potter echoed, tone sounding strangely empty.
She is a Ravenclaw, after all.
Draco wasn't sure why Potter looked sour.
Hermione is brilliant and not a Ravenclaw.
Sure, he agreed.
But Granger and Lovegood are very different. Granger has a recklessness to her, something that I figure is largely influenced by you.
Potter rolled his eyes but didn't argue, and that was the only proof Draco needed.
There's a certain intelligence to Lovegood that you don't see often. She's open to the belief of things that others lose faith in.
She sees things that aren't there, Potter added with an uneasy expression. They aren't there for us, Draco argued. Who is to say they aren't there for her? Why do you care? Draco frowned at Potter. She fascinates me. Despite the way people treat her, Lovegood maintains her beliefs. She truly believes in things that others don't. She has this faith, and nothing anyone says will change that. It's admirable, really. The more Draco spoke, the more Potter seemed to grow upset, and he was honestly baffled. Do you not like her? Potter grimaced. I don't not like her. One side of Draco's lips quirked up as he tried to figure Potter out. She seems close with you. Draco blinked rapidly. Not really. We talk occasionally. I think she could be a good friend, but we aren't quite there yet. It wasn't until Potter's shoulders relaxed that Draco understood. I don't like her the way I like you, Potter. He knew his face was flushed, knew that there was no way around that, but as he looked into pleased eyes, he figured a small amount of embarrassment was an all right price to pay. Oh. Draco rolled his eyes as he stood up. Next time, ask me all right, you jealous prat. I wasn't jealous. I believe in the crumple-horned snorkat far more than I believe you. Potter laughed, the booming noise echoing around them. You are such a git. Get out of here.
The sound of Potter's laughter stuck with Draco, well past when it should have disappeared.
Dear cousin, I regret that this letter will be different from my normal method. I would love to offer insightful questions or begin a discussion that might make you think. There's a lot inside of my head that I would like to talk about, but unfortunately that will have to wait. Things are changing, and not for the better. How cryptic that must sound, but I've noticed a change recently, and it must be talked about. The Dark Lord has always been mad with power, and has always gone for those who oppose that, or he aims to find things to aid his quest for control. But as of late, I have noticed a decrease in attendance when it comes to meetings. The Dark Lord has been absent, and when he is present, there's a thoughtful vacancy that fills him. What has happened? Our raids have increased, and with that comes an increase in violence. Despite the raids, the Dark Lord is never pleased. He insists we do more, insists we try harder. I don't want to try harder. I don't want to try at all. Whispers among our ranks suggest the Dark Lord is looking for something. Speculation would be unwise with no corroboration, and idle tongue is not reliable. Imagination, however, is prominent. I will admit I am worried, and think the Dark Lord seeks will only add to the suffering of others. I do not know what lies ahead, and for that I am scared. The Death Eaters are restless. The Inner Circle shares nothing, and the Dark Lord remains silent. There's nothing I can do to quench my curiosity, but something tells me to remain vigilant. Something is brewing, but I fear the potion will do no good. Is it strange that writing to you has helped my spirits? It's cathartic in a way, having an outlet. I wish I could hear a response, read your words or talk to you. I want to meet you, cousin, want to have a hand in raising you, or to have shaped your life in some way. There's so much I want to say to you, so many lessons. So many conversations, and I wonder if there will ever be time to explore it all. I hope so. Take care, and I hope all is well. Love, Regulus. Draco took a shaky breath as he reread the letter three times. Was it a preface for whatever had happened to Regulus? Would the letter shine light on what had happened to his cousin? Was he going to find out how he had died? The letter was a bit of a mess, and it showed what kind of stress Regulus had been under. He wanted to know more, wanted to know what the Dark Lord had planned all those years ago, wanted to know what had captured his interest. The letters weren't dated, so Draco had no way of knowing how close it was to when Regulus disappeared. He wished he could reply, wished that there was a way for him to be able to talk to Regulus, let him know that even if he couldn't return any letters, that his cousin had still shaped his life. Draco wasn't sure what kind of person he would have been without Regulus. Would he have ever looked deeper into himself?
Would he have believed his father's teachings easier? Would he have had the courage to be a better person? What would have happened to him if not for the letters? He owed a lot to Reglis, and he hoped that despite everything that happened, that Reglis knew it. Draco prayed that his cousin knew how much it all meant to him. Reglis was important to him, and it wasn't fair that no one would ever know about it.
That doesn't make much sense,
Neville said as Draco tried not to laugh. The train jerked a bit as it got up to speed. He watched the scenery pass quickly and eyed the castle until he could no longer see it.
Depends on your perception, Lovegood murmured as she leafed through the Quibbler. Black could very well be the lead singer. Makes sense if you consider his singing abilities. What do you think, Draco? You're his cousin.
I never met him, Draco said with a small smile. But sure, let's say I believe you. Why now? Why is this only brought up now?
When she shrugged, he wondered if she believed what the Quibbler said or was just baiting him.
The truth doesn't always happen immediately. Sometimes it takes time.
Neville narrowed his eyes.
That is either really wise or an excuse.
Lovegood grinned but didn't look up from the magazine.
And what do you think, Neville?
I'm not sure yet.
Draco watched Neville place a hand to his chin and couldn't help but appreciate the change in their friendship. Sure, it was clear that Neville still thought she was madder than all could be, but at least he was listening.
Well, how about you let me know when you decide?
Lovegood said with a snap of the magazine before she eyed them closely.
Daddy says that your parents are searching for Ungubula / Kittlers over the holidays.
Draco cocked his head to the side and ignored Neville's curious gaze. What is that?
Rather clever creatures, but notorious for their mischief. Bad mischief.
He narrowed his eyes at her explanation as his mind began to wander.
They tend to allow for creatures to protect them, but at a cost.
Draco's eyes looked past Lovegood's head as they unfocused. He had known that she was smart, but this was something else altogether. Smart, perceptive, and knowledgeable in means of resources.
My parents are going abroad over most of the holidays, which is why I've been invited to spend the next few weeks with Neville until they return.
And we are going to have so much fun. I can show you the new greenhouse grand setup. It's nothing big, just a small space, but it's big enough for the bedevil snare I've been growing since first year.
Draco mindlessly listened to Neville as he locked eyes with Lovegood. He wasn't sure what it was that she knew, but it was obvious that she was aware of something others weren't. His mother liked to leave the country from time to time, but not his father. His father liked to reiterate the belief that any business associate that wouldn't come to him was one not worth it. The fact that they both were to leave proved that something had changed, and he wasn't sure he wanted to know what. Part of him wanted to stay with Neville for the entire winter break, but his father had requested he be there the night before he was to return to Hogwarts. He honestly dreaded it already.
Gran stays pretty busy throughout the day, so I don't expect we'll see much of her till dinner most nights.
Sounds nice, Draco said distractedly, as his mind still wandered.
She isn't much of a cook, not since she ate the last Hellsoul. And they always questioned her sanity.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Draco turned towards Neville with a frown. What nonsense did you just say? Neville had a pout on his face, and he had to fight the thought of it being endearing.
You weren't even listening.
Sorry, Draco apologized. My mind is elsewhere.
Is it the Nargles?
Both Luna and Neville said in unison, and Draco wondered if it was too late to return to the castle. As they traded high fives, Draco shook his head fondly at them. He was positive at the given time they would become great friends.
Nah, I rather like the Nargles.
As Lovegood began another speech on why it wasn't beneficial to be around Nargles, Draco tried not to notice Neville's worried glances. There was nothing that could make his life easier to deal with, nothing to make his father be a better person, and nothing to make the world a safer place. Why bring up what can't be changed? Draco wasn't sure how Neville became such a kind, caring person with a grandmother like Augusta. He had watched her berate Neville for every minuscule thing she perceived as a wrongdoing, listened to her criticise his every move, and then claim it was because she cared.
Don't slouch, Neville. It's beneath you.
You don't need another wand. Your father's wand is just fine. Not that you could perform half the magic he could at your age. Do you really need another treacle tart? How you made friends is a mystery to me, with the lack of manners you possess. When we go out, don't speak much. Your mother had a brain on her. Not sure who you inherited yours from.
Every time she opened her mouth, Draco had to fight the urge to hex her. He had known for years that Neville's Boggart could have been her, but it wasn't until he met her that he truly understood. She wasn't cruel in the way his own father was, but she was emotionally cruel, and that was equally as bad. Something Neville didn't deserve. But it wasn't until Draco watched Alice Longbottom hand Neville her folded-up gun wrappers in St. Mungo's that his heart truly broke for him. Neville loved his parents, and he was sure if things had turned out differently, they would have loved Neville with everything they had. Part of him wasn't sure what to do or what to say. Sure, his own parents were useless, but at least they knew who he was, and were well enough to be able to take care of him. Shame filled Draco for never fully grasping Neville's situation until faced with it.
It didn't help that his own aunt was responsible for putting Neville's parents in St. Mungo's. He knew it wasn't his guilt to bear, but someone should consciously be thinking about it. And Draco knew that Bellatrix didn't. Not as Severus was to be believed when it came to her personality.
When Alice handed Draco a wrapper, he felt his eyes sting.
Oh, I think Mum likes you.
The happiness in Neville's voice shattered his resolve, and he threw himself forward and into surprised arms.
Are you all right? If you don't want the wrapper, I can keep it instead.
Draco had to swallow thickly before he could speak.
I'm going to keep it.
He wasn't sure he'd ever received such a meaningful gift before. Voices could be heard, but neither moved. Draco lowered his head till it was resting on Neville's shoulder.
I really like your parents, Neville. I think they would be proud of who you are.
A shake exhaled caused Draco to close his eyes tightly.
I know I am proud of you.
Draco,
Neville whispered, emotions palpable.
Thank you for coming with me. It means more than you know.
I'll always be here for you. Always.
They stood in silence. The sounds of the staff and visitors outside drowned out the pleased noises Alice made every time she blew a bubble out of the gum.
I don't know why he hasn't introduced us before.
Augusta's voice had Draco annoyed before she even walked in, but there was no stopping that.
Why am I never surprised to see you two hugging?
Draco took a step back at the sound of Potter's voice. He pushed Neville behind backwards to allow him the chance to wipe his eyes.
Potter,
Draco drawled, amused when Weasley and Granger walked in and waved. It was a strange feeling to have no discord among them. He wasn't sure what to make of it.
Neville!
Granger and Weasley yelled in unison.
I didn't know you were visiting anyone, Weasley bellowed with not much tact as he tried to look over the divisions keeping the beds separated.
When Augusta opened her mouth and Neville tensed, Draco stepped forward.
The healers mentioned they needed to do some routine checkups, so actually we were just leaving.
Oh, did they?
Augusta asked as she moved over to Frank.
I'll just say my goodbyes, then.
Draco pulled lightly on Neville's sleeve to get him to walk with him towards the trio of idiots.
What brings you three here?
Neville asked, the cheeriness in his voice falling flat. At least it did for Draco.
Oh, my dad is recovering from the attack. But he's all right.
Draco looked at Potter with arched brows. An attack? One that wasn't covered by the Daily Prophet? When Potter looked elsewhere, he wondered what had really happened. It was clearly something that wouldn't be shared any time soon. The added mystery annoyed him more than made him curious.
Arthur is ill, isn't he?
Augusta said as she ushered them out of the room.
I'll have to send the house elf over with a basket of goods. I'm sure Molly would appreciate it. Must be stressful with so many children to take care of and handle Arthur being ill too.
A bitter smile stretched Neville's lips, and Draco entwined their arms in comfort. It was odd that Augusta could care about other people but ignore her own grandson's suffering.
She'll like that, Miss Longbottom,
Weasley said with a grateful smile. As they parted ways, Draco sent a lingering look towards Potter. He didn't want his suspicions answered, but he at least wanted Potter to know that he was onto him. Potter's nose scrunched up as he smiled, and Draco realized that it would be hard to get one up on him.
but that wouldn't stop him from trying. If he couldn't beat Potter, then what else was life good for? Draco waited until he knew it was just slightly past acceptable to enter his father's study. He'd been summoned an hour ago, but hadn't wanted to please his father.
Right away, Master Lucius.
He stared at the unfamiliar voice. He could tell it was a house elf, but there hadn't been word on his father getting another one, nor had a bond formed between all members of the family and the new house elf. The only thing he could think of was that the house elf was willingly listening to his father's orders, but that wasn't normal.
Remember, creature, Black knows nothing. Keep it that way.
Black? Did that mean creature belonged to Black? There was a niggling in the back of his mind as he tried to remember if his mother had ever mentioned the Black family to have a house elf still. What had creature done while Black had been in Azkaban? House elf still bound to a lineage with no instructions tend to go mad. He waited until the sound of a disapparition could be heard before he knocked on the door.
You're late,
his father said before the door was fully opened. I apologize. I was making sure everything was in order before my departure tomorrow.
I didn't ask for your excuses.
Draco clenched his hands briefly as he tried to maintain a calm expression. It was hard listening to his father and continued to be what was expected of him.
I'm sorry. Don't grovel, Draco. It's beneath you.
He bit his tongue to stop from saying anything. There honestly was no point, not when his father was determined to argue every point.
How was your trip?
It was sneered with disgust, and it had Draco's stomach sinking. Not as informative as I would have liked, Draco said as he tried to make his voice sound disappointed.
You disappoint me.
Nothing new then.
I have done so much for you, and you repay me with scraps and disobedience.
Draco's mouth parted indignantly, but he said nothing. He knew better.
How can I be proud of you? How can I show you to others when there's nothing to show?
He tried not to let that get to him, tried not to care that his father would never care about him, but it stung, hurt more than he cared to admit.
Learn from this, Draco,
his father said as he pulled out his wand.
Learn to be better, and I might show your obedience to the Dark Lord.
Panic flared inside of him as dread filled his stomach. The Dark Lord? Draco didn't want to meet him, didn't want any sort of obedience the Dark Lord might value. As a flash of red shot out of his father's wand, Draco's mind was too distracted to care about the sting of a hex. All he could picture was the robes his father had in a closet, and a mask that starred in his nightmares. He didn't want that. Didn't want that to be his future.
I do this because I care,
his father continued, unaware of the inner turmoil inside of him. Draco knew time was ticking down, and he wished that he could write his troubles down like Regulus did. Wish he had someone to vent to, someone who cared. He wished he could have met Regulus, even just once.
Will this be a recurring thing? Draco asked as he pushed Potter to the side, so that he could sit on the log too. Or is this a fluke?
When Potter didn't smile, smirk or scoff, Draco grew worried.
Are you all right?
Draco asked as the silence stretched and the air around them grew stifling.
How do you know if what's in your head is truly your own thoughts?
Draco's forehead pinched and he frowned deeply.
Is that supposed to symbolize something? Or do you mean it as it sounds?
Potter shook his head, but his eyes were too expressive, filled with too much emotion, and Draco didn't know how to proceed.
I'm just so angry all the time, Potter finally said. I feel things that aren't me. I see things that aren't me.
There was a beat of silence before horror filled Draco at the implications. I worry that I won't know who I am anymore. Draco placed his hand on the back of Potter's for comfort as the words he wanted to voice left him. What once was my own privacy feels vulnerable, Potter said, tone open in a way Draco had never heard before. My dreams are invaded every night. My waking day is filled with the reminder, and even society isn't distracting, as the events are displayed in the paper.
I don't know what to say, Draco whispered. I want to say it get better.
but false hope never did anything for anyone. Potter huffed, the sound not quite a laugh, but it wasn't the derisive noise he thought it would be. Your lack of words are far more comforting than if you had made something up. I can feel your honesty. Honesty was the only thing Draco had as of late. Dumbledore suggested that occlumency is an important tool for me to learn. He's not wrong, Draco said reluctantly. Snape is my teacher. Draco's brows arched and he withdrew his hand to cover his mouth. Why? He couldn't fathom what would make Dumbledore think Severus would make a good occlumency teacher. Not just for Potter, but for anyone. This won't end well, Draco continued as Potter dragged his hand back in place, only to entwine their fingers. Draco looked down and wished that the action hadn't sent his heart into palpitations. You've been teaching yourself occlumency, right?
Yeah, but I'm a novice, Potter. I don't know what I'm doing half the time.
Am I supposed to feel cracked open with each lesson? I feel like my mind is laid open for the world to see, and the dreams get worse afterward. Draco shook his head violently.
Maybe the first lesson, your mind might be more active, but that's to be expected. But as time passes, you should become more firm in your practices. If your mind is feeling broken into, then there is a problem.
Practices?
He nodded once. Like clearing your mind, shields, or mental muscle stretches.
The confusion on Potter's face caused Draco to narrow his eyes.
Snape did tell you about those, didn't he?
He mentioned that I needed to clear my mind, Potter offered with a shrug, but he didn't tell me how to do that.
I'm confused, Draco admitted as he bit his lip.
If Severus hadn't taught Potter any safety measures, then what had he done?
How do your lessons usually go?
He tells me to clear my mind, and then he uses legitimacy on me.
Excuse me?
Draco's mouth parted as his eyes widened.
I must have heard you wrong.
Potter shook his head, but said nothing.
You mean to tell me that he hasn't fully prepared you for any sort of occlumency before he immediately breaks open your mind with legitimacy?
When Potter nodded, Draco stood up rapidly.
What? Where are you going?
Excuse me, I have something to sort. He knew that Potter didn't understand, but that was all right. He would in due time. The sound the dwarf made as it slammed against the wall was almost as good as the way a few stragglers startled in surprise as Draco stormed into Severus's last class of the day.
Mr. Malfoy, what are you doing?
Severus asked as he gestured for the first years to leave. Draco waited until the door was shut before he sat on top of the nearest table. He knew Severus hated when students did that.
I had an interesting conversation with Potter just now.
Severus rolled his eyes as he began to put away extra ingredients.
Spare me the boring details, if you will.
It's funny. I could have sworn there were actual methods to occlumency. Proper protocols. A set guideline, and definitely a good teacher.
When Severus's hand stilled over a bottle of Dittany, Draco jumped off the table.
I don't understand, Uncle Severus. Why would you make it harder for him? When his life is already shit.
Whatever Potter told you, it's probably true, Draco finished for him, arms folded.
I know that you know that messing with the mind is dangerous, but performing legitimacy on someone who doesn't even know the basics of occlumency?
It's not your place to question my actions.
His tone was firm, and if Draco was anyone else, he might have fled, but he couldn't.
If I don't, no one will, Draco whispered. You could do some serious harm with Potter.
I don't entirely understand what your problem is with him. Sure, he's brash, annoying, a git, self-righteous. Has way too many morals. No sense of fashion. His taste is questionable and he has a hero complex.
Draco smiled despite his mood. But he's so much more than that. He drives me mad, but at the same time, I want to know what else is coming.
What else will he think of? Potter has faults. Faults that I'm sure you haven't been shy about mentioning. But he has merits to him. A lot of merits.
Something you wouldn't know if you continued to look at the world with blinders.
You are so quick to come to the defence of our house, people who are judged unfairly, and yet the hypocrisy befalls you. A thunderous expression crossed Severus's face, but Draco wasn't afraid, nor was he worried.
Do not lecture on what you don't understand.
You're right, Draco agreed readily. I don't understand. I can't for the life of me figure out why you would treat something so serious as occlumency as a joke. Your lessons with Potter will not protect him. And if he's supposed to be the bloody saviour, then you are making it that much easier for the Dark Lord. You are cracking him open and leaving him vulnerable. Unless that's what you want. Severus straightened up until he was towering over Draco.
You question my stance. It should be obvious where my loyalties lie.
Draco lifted both of his hands into the air. Then act like it. It felt odd to oppose Severus so openly. Normally he agreed with his position, agreed with the status quo, but Draco couldn't continue to do so, not when it made no sense. Draco turned around and made his way to the door. Either Severus would listen, or he wouldn't. If you can't change your mind about him, then at least find him a better teacher. He deserves that much. The silence that followed was better than he could have hoped for. As Draco walked by the wall with the ever-growing number of educational degrees, he couldn't help but laugh at them. They were ridiculous, and it spoke to how bad the ministry had become that each one had been approved by Fudge. I'm telling you, Fred, the next one's going to be about something stupid.
That's a given. I want to bet on what it will be. Where's your level of dramatics?
Draco stopped near the entrance of the Great Hall to peer at the Weasley twins curiously. I reckon you've both used up all your dramatics. Who says you have any left? Instead of them growing bitter, they turned to Draco in delight. Little Malfoy wants to play, they said in unison. He shifted on his feet slightly. Perhaps he shouldn't have said anything at all. No, I think I'm fine. Carry on. He managed to turn around, but before he could walk forward, an arm wrapped around his waist and another around his neck. You know, if Harry wouldn't have killed us, I think I might have gone after you. Draco felt his face flush, and he wished he knew which one was which, as to properly hex the idiot. I don't know, George. I think I would have fought you for him. As flattered as I am, Draco drawled as he pushed the doors open. He tried to ignore the way several heads turned towards him, including Potter. I don't think it would have worked. One of them clutched their chest and tried to swoon as best they could while still holding on to Draco. My heart has been broken before we could even get involved. How cruel to tempt me with happiness, only to rip it away. The level of dramatics was almost too much for Draco, and he couldn't help but laugh. Draco wiggled his way out of their hold and took a step back. You see, I'm a selfish person. I don't think I could have had one of you without the other, Draco teased with a wink. When one twin arched a brow and the other parted their mouth, Draco decided his work was done. Do send my love to Potter, won't you? It wasn't until Draco was almost at the slivering table that he heard one of them say, Why is Harry always the lucky one?
Are you flirting with blood traitors?
Draco ignored Pansy and chose to sit near the edge of the table to wait for Neville.
Would make sense, Theodore said in faux confusion, if he was becoming one himself.
He clenched his jaw as he tried to regulate his breathing, as to not show how much they bothered him.
Better a blood traitor than a blood purist any day,
Neville said, tone hard in a way Draco was rather proud of. Neville's voice was the relief Draco needed. He smiled gratefully as he got up. He'd rather eat in the kitchens than eat with the rest of his house. Perhaps Dobby would have some free time to talk.
We'll see about that.
Not yelled loud enough that a few students from other tables turned to listen.
Yeah, we will, Draco called over his shoulder.
In the end, they would all see.
Rumour has it that Chang has a thing for you, Draco said when he heard the telltale sounds of Potter's feet. The rumour mill's filled with a lot of lies, you know this.
Despite Potter sitting down next to him, Draco didn't turn, didn't spare him a glance.
all lies hold some truth to them. I don't know if Cho likes me. Not sure why you care, though, if she did.
Draco turned to glare at Potter, but realised he'd been baited when a brow arched.
Piss off.
Potter grinned, and it held just a bit too much smugness for his liking. Even if she does like me, the feelings don't go both ways.
You're right. I don't care.
Potter laughed, and Draco hated that too. I think you do care. I think you care too much.
Potter,
you don't have to be jealous. The accusation caused a gasp to escape Draco.
That's just a load of hogwash. I'm not jealous. You can date whoever you like.
So you wouldn't care if I asked Cho out? Draco clenched his fist tightly before he forced himself to relax.
Of course not. You are at liberty to be with whomever you like.
Then it's a good thing I don't want to be with Cho. She just wants someone to talk to, someone to listen to her feelings and confusion over Cedric. Draco reluctantly looked at Potter, silently willing him to continue. I don't want to be with anyone right now. Despite the expected answer, he couldn't help but wish there'd been more, that Potter would have alluded something else.
My life is a mess, and dating would only add to that. When did you get wise?
Potter shoved his shoulder. I've always been wise, you prat. Draco arched a brow in disbelief.
Tell that to your past self. I distinctly remember some of your schemes that were far from wise.
The glare Potter sent him caused the smile to form.
So maybe my wisdom has been shattered before, but that doesn't mean it wasn't there. Keep telling yourself that.
I don't know why I put up with you, Potter said, far too softly to take seriously.
Because no one else will.
Potter rolled his eyes, but said nothing.
Thank you.
Draco hummed curiously.
For insulting you?
I swear I hate you, Potter grumbled with a smile too bright.
No, you absolute tosser. Thank you for talking to Snape.
Oh? He fiddled with the lining of his robes instead of looking at Potter.
It was nothing.
No, Potter disagreed.
It was everything. I know he doesn't like me because of my father, but I just want a chance to prove myself. I'm not my father.
Potter's words struck close to home for Draco, and he couldn't help but feel for Potter.
It's not fair, whispered Potter, tone both hard and quiet.
If he's going to hate me, then I want it to be because of something I did, not something that happened before I was born. He wasn't sure what to say, wasn't sure how to make Potter feel better. Comfort still was hard to muster for others.
As much as I hate the occlumency lessons, I think I expected them to be bad. I knew going into it that they wouldn't be what Dumbledore thought they would. But yet I was still disappointed. Nothing I do is ever good enough for him. No amount of studying will ever make him see me as someone other than my father's son. Someone I never got to meet. I'm proud of who I am. Proud of who my father was, even if he made mistakes. He loved me. I know he did. His actions shouldn't be taken out on me. Nor should I be held accountable. I just wish Snape could see that. If he wants to blame someone, then why can't it be my father? Why should I be the conduit for his grudges?
Draco moved until he could rest his head on Potter's shoulder.
I don't have an answer for that, he admitted reluctantly. I tried to get through to him about his lessons, but I didn't touch upon any of what you just said. I think that maybe you need to be the one to do that.
Potter snorted, the sound half-choked.
That will never happen. The day I willingly talk to Snape about something not school-related, or Dumbledore ordered, will be the day you become a Weasley. Hold your tongue!
Draco snapped, as Potter broke out in silent laughter and his shoulders shook. Silence settled around them, and it was peaceful in a way that their lives weren't.
Dumbledore's going to teach me occlumency instead. Snape decided it would be better off in the hands of someone less biased.
He actually said that?
No, that's how I interpreted it.
Draco shook his head the best he could while it was still on Potter's shoulder.
I don't know how well the lessons will go with Dumbledore. He hasn't even looked me in the eye for months, and I am still angry with him. But I know he will treat me better than Snape at least.
Draco was curious to know what Potter meant, but didn't want to ask. It wasn't his place. If you ever want to learn some practice methods with me, I am here, Draco offered hesitantly. When Potter's head tilted onto his own, Draco felt at ease. I might just take you up on that. You teach Neverwell. What are you on about? You are the one with your little dueling club. It's not a dueling... Wait, are you baiting? Draco laughed when Potter smacked his arm playfully. But seriously? Potter began. I can tell the difference when Neville takes a spell I taught him and then goes to you for further practice or help. He comes to me to teach me the lessons you have taught him. I like that. I still wish you could be there. It wasn't meant to be. Cryptic. Draco rolled his eyes. I'm all right with how it turned out. I enjoy how inclusive you've made it for Neville. He enjoys your lessons and has fun with the rest of your secret dueling club. When Potter shifted, Draco realized his words might have seemed like he'd been implying something negative. Don't think too hard, Draco teased. Neville is fine. I was just saying thank you. He knew that Neville had been lonely before they became friends, and Draco was a little miffed that the rest of the Gryffindors hadn't been close with Neville. But everything worked out in the end. What they didn't see about him was their loss. Maybe he can be part of the next secret dueling club. Draco grinned despite himself. I'd like that. Maybe he'd be the one to run it. Who knew? Potter? Draco called up hesitantly when Potter got up to leave. I know this won't make much sense, and I would elaborate if I knew more. But I want to let you know that Black's house elf has been taking orders from my father. Potter's hand that had been about to pat Draco on the shoulder froze in midair. What? How do you know this? How do you think? I overheard Creature in the manor, and he was listening to my father. Do you know what kind of orders they were? Draco shook his head. I only heard the end of an order calling for silence. It was clear that I wasn't supposed to have heard it. The way Potter's eyes regarded him intently unnerved Draco. He wasn't sure what Potter was looking for. The truth? A lie? Thank you, Potter finally said. Thank you for telling me. He wasn't sure it would be important in the end, but it had felt like something Potter should know. Draco just hoped nothing would come out of it in the end. Mass breakup from Azkaban. Ministry fears Black is rallying point for old Death Eaters.
Draco choked at the title before he opened the Daily Prophet intently. His stomach lurched at the report. 10 convicted inmates escaped. He read over the names with a heavy heart, until he came across one that had anger mounting.
Bellatrix Lestrange. It wasn't a surprise. Not after the other names had been mentioned. He knew from his mother that Bellatrix was high up in the Dark Lord's circle. The more he read, the more he grew nauseous. His fists clenched when he realized they were blaming the breakout on Black, and not even pausing to consider the possibility that something else had happened. Fudge was so blinded to reality that the evidence of the Dark Lord's return had been shoved to the side and buried under outlandish theories.
Why do you look so angry?
Draco startled before he attempted to shove the paper away.
Did the fashion section get scrapped? I told you no one is interested in...
Neville's breath caught, and Draco closed his eyes in defeat. Tell me this isn't real. It's real. He watched Neville's face crumble, and he wanted to make it all go away. Make it better.
It's not some crazy article done by the Quibbler.
No. Neville's fingers tentatively stretched forward to take the paper, and Draco had half a mind to hold on tighter, prevent him from reading the bad news. When Neville didn't say anything, and just kept silent far longer than it would have taken to read the article, Draco grew concerned. Neville.
Even after Black escaped, I never stopped to consider that others might too. Lestrange got off easy being placed in Azkaban. She and the others arrested, tortured my parents. Tortured them until they couldn't function outside of St. Mungo's. They deserved to rot forever.
Draco moved closer until he could put his arms around Neville.
It's not fair. They shouldn't be out free, not like this. And not while the government is going to use it as another excuse to pander their idiotic beliefs.
I'm sorry, Draco whispered. unsure what else he could say.
I hate them.
I know.
I want to kill them.
I'll help you. Neville laughed before he wiped his eyes.
No, you wouldn't. Just as you know, I wouldn't actually kill anyone.
Draco wasn't so sure the former was true. He would have helped Neville seek justice if it had been something he thought Neville might do. I'll always support you, he whispered, even if you want to commit murder.
Thank you,
Neville said softly.
I hope you know I'll do the same.
Surprisingly, Draco believed him.
Did you hear what Potter said?
You think it's true? No way he fought you-know-who. I don't know. If anyone's going to, I'd think it would be him. The whispers followed Draco as he walked the halls in confusion. He had no clue what they were talking about. Had the school finally wised up enough to realise Potter had been telling the truth all along? It wasn't until he walked into the Great Hall and took in the Gryffindor table covered in letters, and the rest of the students with copies of the Quibbler that it all began to make sense. Had Potter done an interview? Or had the Quibbler made Potter into an outlandish story as they did with Black? Was Potter a lead singer too? Or just a backup vocal?
Draco!
He was pulled aside by Lovegood and promptly had an edition of the Quibbler shoved in front of his face. The front cover was an older photo of Potter taken during the Triwizard tournament, and he wondered if that was a strategic move to remind the viewers of Potter's age during the incident. Harry Potter speaks out at last, the truth about he who must not be named, and the night I saw him return. A slow smile formed on Draco's face at the headline. He tucked the magazine in his rose before he thanked Lovegood.
I knew you'd want one.
It wasn't until he made it to the Slytherin table that he noticed Umbridge walking between the Gryffindor and Hufflepuff tables. He couldn't tell what was being said, but he could infer from her rigid posture and Potter's smile that it wasn't anything good. He looked around the Great Hall and wasn't surprised to see most of the students scrounging for a neighbour who might have the Quibbler.
Let me see,
Neville demanded before he'd even sat down.
This is going to be good, I just know it.
And the backlash. You know there will be backlash.
He already faces backlash. How is this any different?
Neville had a point, but he couldn't help but worry anyway.
It's one way to get people to change their minds,
Neville continued.
I can't imagine there'd be a single student who will not read this by the end of the week.
As far as predictions went, Neville wasn't wrong. Of course that was aided by Umbridge's 27th decree, in which declared any student found in possession of the Quibbler would be expelled. In his opinion, Umbridge took it to the extreme. Was the government that concerned about people having a difference of opinion? Could no one have a free thought without being shunned or made to be seen as a lunatic? Neville's thought on the article changing people's minds seemed to be correct as well. He hadn't seen Potter receive such a warm welcome since their third year. People stopped to talk to him. They congratulated him, and as far as Draco could tell, they seemed genuine. Well, as genuine as they could be, considering they had shunned him for the entire school year. But it wasn't until Draco reached the common room that he really took notice of the changes. Several students from varying years were reading the article.
Is it true?
Draco startled at being confronted by a first year he didn't know.
Did Potter really fight the Dark Lord?
A seventh year called out.
If Potter can win, then...
Oi! Hold your tongue!
He looked around as they all began arguing and vying for his attention.
It doesn't matter what I tell you. You are either going to ignore it or take it at face value. Come to your own conclusions and leave me be.
A few older students nodded, but Draco had known all along they didn't actually want his opinion. They'd only been looking for a reason to go against him. It was smart on their end, but Draco hadn't chosen a wand yesterday. They'd have to try harder than that to get to him. When Draco pushed past them and entered his dorm, he wasn't surprised to see it occupied, nor was he surprised to see them reading the article too. No questions were brought up, no insults, jabs or mutterings were said, and that alone confused Draco. It wasn't like any of them to remain quiet, at least when they held such strong opinions. Despite the lack of noise, he could feel their stares on him, but he wasn't going to disrupt the calm. Sometimes, the absence of something was preferable. As Draco listened to the pages of the Quibbler being flipped, the soft noises of shuffling and a few interested noises, he wondered if Potter could change their minds as well. It was worth a shot.
"I'm never going to get this,"
complained Neville as he threw himself on the floor of the Room of Requirement.
"Quit being dramatic. That's my thing."
Neville glared half-heartedly as he began to play with the cushion behind his head.
"The X's were easy. The intermediate jinxes only took a little bit of practice, and the shields were a breeze. So why can't I get this?"
Draco shoved Neville a bit until he could fit his head on the pillow as well.
"Well, it's rather advanced, isn't it? Some NEWT-level students don't even practice the Patronus charm."
He was impressed that Potter could not only perform a Patronus, but that it was fully fledged, and not just non-corporeal.
"I suppose so. And you have a non-corporeal Patronus as it is. That's still impressive. You've only been practicing it for a few weeks."
Neville rolled on his side and peered down at Draco.
"Yeah, but I want to progress faster. I want to make a dent in all of this while there's still time."
"Time?" Draco asked as he, too, rolled on his side. "What's going on in your head? What are you worried about?"
Neville shrugged once, eyes not meeting Draco's.
"With the breakout, the disappearances, and even the deaths, things are getting serious, and I want to be ready. I want to be able to make a difference."
"You already do make a difference."
Neville smiled softly, eyes still downward.
"You're biased. You have to say that."
"Doesn't make it any less true."
When Neville looked up, Draco relaxed at the calm expression on his face. He knew that Neville would be just fine.
"Why won't you practice with me?"
Draco lay down on his back as he refused to meet Neville's eyes.
"I'm not light enough for Patronus."
"That's rubbish."
The anger in Neville's tone might have been comforting another time, but Draco wasn't feeling it.
"Statistics show that wizards and witches who are predominantly dark in their magic can't produce Patronus past a wispy puff of silver."
"And you think that's you?"
Draco shrugged once, uncomfortable with our conversation altogether.
"You have to know that isn't true."
"Neville," he began with a heavy sigh, "do you realise the kind of second-hand magic I've been exposed to growing up? Even if I haven't performed a lot of dark magic, it's still left a residue. It's still left pieces that my core has been around for so long."
"I think you're seeing what isn't there."
Draco's forehead wrinkled.
"Why does that sound like something Lovegood would say?"
When Neville flushed, Draco sat up quickly.
"No way."
Neville shook his head.
"It's not like..."
"No way," he repeated with a breathy whisper. "I was right."
"Rare occurrences can happen, yes."
Draco smacked Neville's arm as he grinned.
"So you and Lovegood, huh?"
"We are just friends,"
argued Neville, but his ears were red, and Draco was suspicious.
"For now, maybe," Draco conceded with a shrug. "But when you get married, I'm going to tell every guest that I was right and that I knew this would happen."
Neville rolled his eyes and shoved Draco hard enough that he toppled over.
"Enough of me. Let's talk about how you are mental."
"I've heard worse insults. That won't get to me."
"Draco."
The long-suffering sigh had Draco smirking at the ceiling.
"Just forget about everything else and just try, all right? Try and do a Patronus."
Draco wanted to listen to Neville, wanted to pull out his wand and practice right along with him. But he couldn't shake the negative aspect of his mind that told him he wasn't allowed.
"I can't."
The silence that followed wasn't comforting, and it made Draco feel worse, but he wasn't going to change his mind.
"I'm not ready."
Neville sighed, the sound not pleased, but also not annoyed.
"All right, but that doesn't mean you get to get out of helping me."
Draco sat up and crossed his legs as he gestured for Neville to get on with it.
"All right, I'll help you. Get to work."
"Well, now you just sound like an autocrat."
"I have always wanted power."
Neville grumbled inaudibly.
"I knew I should have asked Harry for extra lessons.
You wound me, Draco said as he clutched his heart. I'm your loving best friend who would sacrifice the world for you, and here you are.
Shut it, Neville said with a laugh. You are too much.
Just help me. All right, all right. Draco narrowed his eyes and watched the way Neville held his posture and how his breathing regulated. Show me what you've got.
Expecto Patronum.
A silvery, wispy blob shot out of Neville's wand, and Draco felt the magic of the spell soothe his move.
Ah!
Neville bellowed as he ran a hand through his hair.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Draco instructed him to do the spell several more times, and he made sure to watch his wrist movements, pronunciation, and even his breath intake.
Spell-wise, your stance and everything external is fine,
Draco concluded with a thoughtful hum.
That means it's the requirements of the spell internally that needs working on.
What does that mean?
Draco rolled his eyes.
The memory, you dolt. Whatever memory you are using to fuel the spell isn't good enough.
Oh. Neville scratched the side of his temple.
But that can't be right.
I used the happy memory.
Well,
I used one of us.
Draco's breath caught in his throat, and he looked up at Neville with wide eyes.
Why are you so surprised?
Neville's tone held a touch of defensiveness.
Now who's the doll? You are my best friend.
Well,
Draco began, a nervous energy to him that he wasn't used to.
Well, maybe you need a better one.
Neville shrugged and closed his eyes in what Draco assumed was concentration. It took several more attempts, 6 more memory changes, and a full hour before Neville Patronus retained some kind of shape.
Looks like a snail.
No, it doesn't, Draco argued with a sneer. It's far too big.
Then you guess, you ass.
I think it's a crub.
Rather small for a crub,
Neville said with pinched brows and a small frown.
Then maybe it's an owl. No wings for an owl, can't you tell?
Eat dung, Neville chuckled, but it quickly turned into loud guffaws.
It's an improvement, whatever it is, Neville said happily as he clapped his hands.
His expression turned soft when he looked up at Draco.
Thank you.
Draco wrapped an arm around Neville's shoulder. Any time. And he meant that. He would be there for Neville no matter what. Always. The aftermath of Dumbledore's departure from the school was all Draco had to go on. The rumours were insane. Anything from Dumbledore Muggle punching Fudge in the face before disapparating away to Umbridge screaming for Dementors as Dumbledore set fire to his own office. The only actual proof that there was to go on was that a Ravenclaw student turned in Potter's group to Umbridge, and that had somehow led to Dumbledore leaving Hogwarts and Umbridge to take over as headmistress. The only people who'd been in Dumbledore's office weren't talking, and he wondered if that was due to Umbridge. Was she mad that Dumbledore had slipped through, or was she embarrassed?
I miss Dumbledore.
Do you? We haven't even seen him in months.
Yeah, but he's better than Toadface.
Draco couldn't shake the whisperers. They followed him everywhere. Speculations that were outlandish and the decrees that Umbridge kept tacking to the walls. Was it necessary to have a decree that named her as the headmistress? As if anyone could forget. The overall opinion of most was that Dumbledore would be back at some point. Evidence of the past supported that. But Draco wasn't sure how that would happen with Fudge as minister and Umbridge as his loyal lackey. The Daily Prophet had covered the change, and of course it all showed the Ministry in a positive light, while still shunning Dumbledore. Many people received letters from parents that urged them to remain on their best behaviour. Neville had been sent a letter from Augusta saying under no circumstance would she tolerate him giving in to a wretched witch, something that surprised the both of them. It had been the first time Neville had been proud of his grandmother. Draco had received a simple note from his father telling him to offer any aid he could to Umbridge. Fat chance of that.
Mr. Malfoy,
Umbridge called at the end of the next Defence Against the Dark Arts lesson.
Stay behind for me, won't you?
Draco shared a look with Neville before he stood up and waited for the lingering students at the door to leave.
I wondered if you haven't seen the latest educational decree.
Oh, he had. He just ignored it. Most of his housemates from fifth year and up had joined her group. They paraded around the common room, drunk on borrowed power.
Fudge has allowed me to form a group of well-behaved students with bright futures who are loyal to the ministry. The Inquisitorial Squad.
She looked at him expectantly when he said nothing. Her smile dimmed, and she began to rifle through her drawers.
I have your father's assurances that you'd be willing to join, and I thank you for that. We need students from backgrounds such as yours to—
I think there has been a mistake,
Draco interrupted with a smile that he hoped came across as fake as it was.
You see, I didn't want to join.
Pardon me?
A false high-pitched giggle was released, and Draco wanted to cover his ears.
The Inquisitorial Squad isn't for me.
And why not?
Her tone was no longer polite, and her fingers were clenched, causing her to crinkle a few letters in her hands.
I'm rather busy with schoolwork as it is, not to mention studying for the upcoming OWLs. They are right around the corner, and I would like to focus on my future.
Umbridge's eyes narrowed, and her beady eyes made him nauseous.
Are you sure this is the stance you wish to take? I will have to send this back to your father.
Draco took a deep breath that had been expected after all.
I sincerely hope so.
When her mouth parted, he knew she would understand what he was implying. Her face twisted into an expression he had only seen her use when speaking to Potter.
This disappoints me.
Draco couldn't have been more enthused at the prospect.
Sorry, ma'am.
He hoped she could see through the lie as easily as she had before.
If that is all, I must return to my studies.
She waved him away with a disgusted noise and promptly pulled out parchment to furiously write on. As he left her office and walked down the hall, he went over all the recent changes. It wasn't just the school that had changed, and soon enough, Draco would be able to show how much he had changed as well. Time would tell, and he couldn't wait to see where it took him. The calm that had settled had disappeared quickly.
I'm telling you, set them off in the Great Hall.
Are you stupid? That's not going to be big enough.
Too confined.
Yeah, but if you don't have some restrictions, they'll get lost.
A not-so-quiet conversation had Draco stopping in front of a classroom with the door open a crack.
What if we... No, George. You didn't even hear what I said. I didn't need to know it would have been garbage.
Draco pushed the door open further. The action caused a small creak that drew the attention of the Weasley twins.
Little Malfoy,
will you quit calling me that?
There was a shared look before they grinned widely.
Not a chance, they both said in unison.
He huffed slightly before he looked around curiously. The classroom they were in was old and unused, not the best spot for whatever mischief they were up to.
What are you doing?
Draco asked, unable to stop himself. Identical brows arched, and he wondered if that was something they practiced. Draco opened his mouth to tell them that he had overheard them arguing, but before he could, they turned their backs on him and began whispering, loudly.
What do you think?
Think we can trust him? I don't see why not. Harry does.
Yeah, but Harry isn't always the brightest.
Draco had to bite his lip to stop from snorting. We can just be vague. It's not like we have to tell him that we're pranking Umbridge.
You're pranking Umbridge?
Asked Draco as his eyes widened.
What a power move.
They turned around suddenly with narrowed eyes.
Were you eavesdropping? You weren't exactly being quiet. What was I supposed to do? Tune you out?
One of the twins, George, no Fred, nodded. That would have been polite.
When am I ever polite?
Two hums could be heard before you watched them look at each other.
He's got a fair point, Fred.
All right,
they both began.
We may have something planned in about 5 minutes that may disrupt lessons, and it
may
impact Umbridge's day.
Draco shook his head incredulously. There weren't many people willing to do something so drastic. Leave it to a Gryffindor.
And what can I do to help?
When they grinned widely and full of mischief, he wondered if he had made a mistake.
So, little Malfoy.
They ignored his grumbled complaints. We have created our very own brand of fireworks. One wave of want and a dramatic flash of smoke later, Draco stared down at an outrageously large pile of fireworks. He picked up a large pink Catherine wheel and let out an impressive whistle. It was at least 5 feet in diameter. Are they similar to Dr. Filibuster? George, possibly Fett, clutched his chest and let out a gasp. That is insulting. Ours are far superior.
Prove it.
They smirked, and Draco decided that that was honestly scary. We haven't decided where to set them off. I said in the Great Hall.
Yes, I heard your argument,
Draco interrupted. He ignored the way they glared darkly.
Why not let them off in the corridors?
All of the twins, Draco wasn't sure who, cupped their chin while the other twin hummed thoughtfully.
Keep going.
Draco rolled his eyes. It's confined enough that the fireworks won't get loose and disappear to a wider space, but is also big enough that Umbridge will have trouble getting to them. At least, not with how many floors and hallways there are. When they said nothing and only stared, Draco became nervous. If you let them off on different floors at different times during the day, you might even get a chance for a few to enter classrooms. Why stop at any bothering Umbridge? I could kiss you. Draco spluttered as he felt his cheeks heat up. The offer didn't seem genuine, but it wasn't the first time they had flirted with him. Before he could say something, a hand smacked the back of possibly George's head. Here's 15, Fred. 15! Fred glared at George as he gingerly rubbed the spot that had been smacked. So, I won't kiss you. Thank Merlin for small miracles. But, Fred began with a wink, find me when you are 17. That's not happening. Draco shook his head firmly. Draco arched a brow when Fred sighed heavily. George threw several fireworks in the air before he pulled out his wand and levitated them out into the corridor, where they lit on fire and chaos ensued.
Screams could be heard as one of the dragon's fireworks roared loudly, and flames burst outward.
This is going to be good, Draco whispered, as he closed the door when he could hear the sound of feet thundering by.
Hurry, Filch, hurry!
Umbridge yelled, the sound muffled from behind the door.
They'll be all over the school unless we do something. Stupefy!
What happens when she does that? Draco asked.
There had to be something. It was the Weasley twins, after all.
Fred opened his mouth, but a large explosion caused Draco to reach for something to keep him upright.
That happens. Impressive.
Fred and George puffed out their chests.
What happens if she vanishes them?
That would have been his first thought if things had been reverse.
They multiply by 10.
Brilliant. Draco had never seen someone so young be so smart when it came to the things the Weasley twins were capable of. If he didn't know any better, he would think that they would have done well in Slytherin. The sound of the doorknob turning had them all exchanging a panicked look. Fred raised his wand, and Draco snorted despite the situation. Was he going to stun Umbridge if it was her? They all relaxed when Potter's ugly mop of hair was seen before the rest of them. I figured you both would be nearby. Potter cut off when he caught sight of Draco. Malfoy, what? Potter looked between the three of them with pinched brows. Fred and George wrapped an arm around him and sandwiched him between them. We've stolen your boyfriend. Draco elbowed them both as Potter's face turned an unattractive shade of red, and he jerked out of their hold.
He's not. We're not.
Fred smiled, the action far too innocent to be real.
So you are single, then?
Draco turned to Potter.
I swear if you don't lie, I will hex you and then feed you to Umbridge.
A startled noise left Potter, but Draco didn't stop to care before he edged closer to him. Several explosions and a few startled cries outside drew their attention, and Draco had never been more relieved in his life.
How long will they last?
Until she figures out how to get rid of them. George's tone was rather proud.
So, not for at least a week.
Fred surmised with a happy hum.
As fascinating as all of this is, Draco drawled as he straightened his robes.
I'll leave them in your capable hands, Potter.
I meant what I said, Fred yelled as Draco placed a hand on the knob. Find me when you're 17.
Oi, Potter said, and Draco could hear some kind of shuffling behind him, but he wasn't going to look. It wasn't until he stepped into the corridor that he caved. He looked behind him to see Potter with a slight pout. He sent him a wink and couldn't help but smile at the way it changed Potter's entire demeanour. Perhaps the fireworks weren't the only good things that had happened that day.
dear cousin. The Dark Lord has asked me to loan him my family house elf, Creature. This does not bode well. What you have to realize is that the Dark Lord does not value the life of anyone but his own. He will parade around the belief that those who follow blood purity are the only ones worth a spot in his new society, but he doesn't truly believe that. I have witnessed firsthand how he treats those in his service, those who are beneath him and those who command his respect. The Dark Lord does not care about anyone unless they can serve his agenda in some way, and when they are no longer useful, he gets rid of them. Creature being requested does not make sense. If it was grunt work, the Dark Lord would have asked for a Death Eater. I fear that whatever he has planned will kill my elf. It is not out of the realm of possibilities to think that the Dark Lord will see Creature as expendable, a life worth giving up in the name of the bigger picture. I was not told where Creature would be taken to. I was not told what would happen. I was told nothing. As far as means of protection, there is little I can do for Creature. I can't order him to apparate out of danger, nor can I order him to disobey the Dark Lord. The only thing I can do is to tell him to come to me when the Dark Lord no longer needs him. It's not much, but it was the only thing I had. I fear for him, cousin. I wish I could have gone with them. The Dark Lord was in a good mood when he arrived, and that alone has heightened my anxiety. If you recall my last letter, he was distracted, and his mood has changed drastically. Whatever he's been after has clearly been found. But how does that involve Creature? What use could a house elf be for the Dark Lord? Nothing good, I assure you. Pardon me if I have rambled. There are too many theories in my mind, and voicing them has always been a help to me. Only I have no one to voice them to. I will keep you updated. I do hope you are faring well. As always, you are in my thoughts. Love, Regulus. Draco's eyes were wide by the time he finished the letter. Creature? What use would the Dark Lord have for an house elf? The fact that Regulus had been worried caused Draco to become worried. What had happened? He slumped down until the letter fell to the floor, and he could cover his face with his hands. Just once, he wanted to be able to talk to Regulus. He wanted to ask him questions, voice his own worries, and just meet the person who had changed so much of his life. What had the Dark Lord been happy about? What had happened? Creature was still alive. That much Draco knew. Was it somehow related to Creature listening to his father's orders? Was Creature still employed by the Dark Lord, even if by distance? Part of him wanted to ask Creature, summon him, but he knew that wouldn't be wise. Especially if his father's orders were taken seriously. Draco felt helpless, which was silly considering it had already happened. There was no need to worry over the past. And yet, he couldn't stop himself from wishing Regulus well, even though he knew it would all end. One day, there would be no more letters. An end that he prayed wouldn't come soon. I didn't expect to see you here, Draco said as he sat next to Potter on the log in their usual spot by the lake. But with Dumbledore gone, I suppose your lessons have been put on hold. Potter's hands clenched, and Draco looked at him in alarm. Before Dumbledore left, he told Snape that should he disappear, that Snape was to take over my lessons. A low whistle escaped Draco. I take it the lessons are as they were before? Yes. No, I don't know. Potter's shoulders slumped, and a confused expression morphed his features. It was tense at first, that's a given, but he was a bit calmer. At least until... A sheepish shrug paused Potter's retelling. It's my fault, really. Before the lessons, he always empties memories in a pensive, and I got too curious. Potter, Draco sighed. Severus was a private person. Invading something as personal as a memory would have been unforgivable in Severus's eyes. I know. You don't have to lecture me. I shouldn't have done it. Is that what upsets you? Did he react badly? Potter laughed humorously. Oh, he reacted about as well as I expected him to. But no, that's not what is bothering me. When Potter didn't continue, Draco urged him with a hand. Snape is always talking about my father.
He takes great pleasure in telling me how arrogant he was, how full of himself he was, and how awful he had been. But keep in mind the narrator, Potter, said Draco, far gentler than he thought was necessary. Snape holds grudges. What he says comes from a place of anger, and that must be considered when it comes to whether you believe him. That's what I always thought, what I've always done, but the memory I saw, it wasn't good. Draco hummed curiously. How so? Potter closed his eyes tightly. My father bullied him. Not just with words either. And the worst thing is that Snape wasn't even doing anything. They targeted him because they were bored. A frustrated growl left Potter. What kills me is everything I felt during the memory. I have never felt sorry for Snape, ever. But he didn't deserve that. I don't like feeling empathy for him, but yet I am. I hate that. Draco let out an exhale, as he nodded in understanding. Finding humanity in those you oppose would be a wake-up call. He wasn't sure what he would have thought about finding a compassion for someone like his father, after holding a grudge for so long. So you were shown a side of your father you didn't think existed? A jerky nod could be seen before Potter ran a hand through his hair. Sirius talks about my father as if he was the greatest person he had ever known. Remus's voice is always filled with a fondness for my father is brought up. Teachers and even strangers praise my father. And yet, I saw something horrible. Draco bit his lip as he debated whether or not to offer his opinion. Parents were a sensitive subject for some people. How old was he? 15, our age. My father was a bloody bully. I used to be a bully. Potter's head snapped up. Yeah, but you changed. When Draco arched a brow, Potter raised both hands and continued to talk. You've shown over and over how changed you are. And who's to say your father didn't do the same? Draco asked gently. I can't condemn him for being a bully. That would make me a hypocrite. Nor can I offer an opinion on whether he truly changed or not. Everyone's path to change is different. What I did might not be the same thing your father did. It depends on the person, and whether they truly mean it. Potter's brows were furrowed, and he had a heavy frown on his face. You think he changed? Draco shrugged once. I don't know. I would like to think he did. I would like to think that all bullies grow up at some point. When Potter's brows continued to furrow to the point of them merging together, Draco patted him on the shoulder. Perhaps you should ask Black and Lupin about it. They would know how he had changed better than anyone else. They might even know his methods, but at least they'd be able to answer your questions. I suppose so. I'm just angry. Angry with them too. Being angry isn't a bad thing, you know, Draco said with a small smile. It's just as valid as being happy. Emotions are meant to ground you. They are meant to help you cope with your surroundings. Have you been reading behavioural books again? Piss off, Draco said with a laugh as he shoved Potter. I'm trying to help you, you prat. Potter smiled, perhaps not as bright as Draco was used to, but it was enough. You are helping, you know. I didn't want to think rationally, which is why I came here. I knew you wouldn't let me get too far into my own mind. He wasn't so sure he'd done all of that, but it was nice that Potter had come to think of him at all. Do you think anyone can change? Potter asked, his voice soft and curious. Draco exhaled loudly as he thought it over. I think that anyone can change if they want to. It's not as simple as recognizing faults. You really have to mean it, have to actively seek change, and you have to want it. Potter tilted his head and eyed her with a quirk of his lips, and Draco wasn't sure what to make of that. Change isn't exclusive, Draco continued. It is something you have to work at, though, actively. Depending on what someone is changing, it could be something that has to be constantly in the forefront of one's mind. Some change will always need to be addressed. Like what? Well, take me, for example. I was raised with bigoted notions, ideals that hurt others, and blood purity politics.
That's not something that I can just acknowledge and move on. That's not something I get to see and just say, I have changed. Those kinds of problems are something I deal with every day. What do you mean? Potter asked, his head tilted and his hair blew in the breeze. Draco rubbed the back of his neck. No one had ever talked to him about his mistakes. It was vulnerable, and he didn't like it. I have to unteach myself the things that I was brought up with. It's not easy to take something that has been taught my whole life and just stop believing it, or to change my mentality. Learning to be a better person is not a one-time instance. It's a daily experience, and I will always seek change, always try and better myself. I think that's admirable. I think you should save your admiration for those that never had to change. Potter narrowed his eyes, and Draco fought the urge to shift uneasily. You don't think you deserve praise? For learning how to not be a bigoted blood purist? No. I don't deserve praise for learning how to be a decent human being. Malfoy, Potter sighed, frustration evident. Being a good person isn't owned to those who've never messed up. The idea that you can't be a good person after making mistakes is flawed. Your change deserves to be acknowledged. Acknowledge it, but don't praise it, Draco begged. I want you to see how far I have come, but I don't want you to praise something that I should have done all along. Potter still looked unhappy, but he didn't argue, and Draco was thankful for that. One of these days, I'm going to convince you that you are one of the good guys. A startled laugh left Draco, and he couldn't help the fond smile that crept up. One of these days, I might let you. With OWLs right around the corner, it wasn't uncommon to see panicked students roaming the halls screaming, fainting or even crying. Draco had become desensitized to the whole thing. So when Greengrass entered the common room crying, he assumed it was about her studies.
Snape said I didn't have the scores to become a curse breaker.
You haven't even taken runes, Pansy pointed out with a smirk. And don't you have a tea in defense against the dark arts?
Greengrass glared as she wiped her eyes.
You know I raised it to a D.
As if that was any better. Draco shook his head and tried to get back to studying arithmetic.
What did Snape tell you, Draco?
Draco looked up and smiled in a way he hoped came off as fake. By the way Pansy narrowed her eyes, he was pretty sure he had accomplished that. He said, I have the scores to do whatever I want. It hadn't exactly gone that way. Draco told him that he wasn't sure what he wanted to do outside of Hogwarts. That seemed so far away, what with the war happening and his family issues. A career seemed years away. But Severus had urged him to think on what he wanted to do and not let other things stand in the way of his future, and his scores were good enough to give him a head start in a wide variety of jobs. Draco still hadn't decided what he wanted to do. Maybe something in potions. Or perhaps teaching. He wasn't sure he had the patience to teach others. But maybe it could be something learned. There were a lot of options open for him. He just had to really think about it. Daphne rolled her eyes.
Yes, because you're just so perfect.
That is something I have never said about myself. Nor will you hear me do so.
You certainly act like it,
Theo said as he breezed into the room and sat on the couch with a grace expected of him.
Draco wasn't sure why they misunderstood him enough to think that he thought he was perfect. They clearly hadn't paid enough attention.
No one is perfect. Not your parents, not the Dark Lord, not Dumbledore and not even Merlin. Everyone is flawed. It's what you do with those imperfections that matter. He stood up and gathered his books. Maybe he should have stuck to the library after all.
What about Potter?
Blaze yelled, and Draco froze at the entrance.
What about him?
Without turning around, Draco let out a soft whisper. His imperfections are what make him who he is. He's not perfect either. Draco rather liked Potter's imperfections. Liked them a lot. Liked him a lot. The exit of the Weasley twins was something Draco knew he would always remember. Not only had they made a swamp of the corridors, they'd also flown out of the castle on their brooms, but not before throwing out another round of fireworks. Draco looked around the chaos of students cheering,
teachers attempting to get order, and Umbridge who did nothing except scream in outrage. Before they left, Fred had looked back to give Draco a wink, and Draco hadn't bothered to hide a smile. Weasleys were trouble. That much he'd always known. But those two were a different kind of trouble. And Draco kind of liked that about them. Fred just needed to be knocked down a peg or two. The days after their departure were just as hectic as if they had never left. Several students stepped up in an attempt to replace the Weasley twins. The pranks weren't nearly as good, but it kept Umbridge busy, and that was always fun to watch. The teachers seemed to ignore it for the most part, and it had him curious as to whether the students or the teachers hated her more. The atmosphere helped calm a lot of the stress surrounding their examinations. An influx of students fainting were expected, but overall, Draco was surprised he wasn't as stressed as other students. Perhaps it was the hours he had spent studying, the years of good grades, or the knowledge that school paled in comparison to the true horrors of the world that led to a lack of worry over the results. When it came to the actual examinations, he was fairly confident he would receive passing scores in all of the OWLs. Due to Neville being in Potter's secret dueling club and their practice sessions, Draco knew Defence Against the Dark Arts would be one of his higher scores of the year. As he finished up his own test, a silver light caused him to pause to look around curiously. Draco grinned when a small capuchin monkey floated near his knees. He looked up and his grin grew wider when he realised it was Neville's Patronus. He'd never been as proud of another person as he was in that moment. "Hi, little one," Draco whispered to the Patronus that was slowly moving upward as if climbing up his body. "I wish you could give your caster a message for me. I want you to let him know how proud I am of him." Draco didn't think Patronuses were sentient, but the monkey's head bobbed in a way that resembled a nod. He felt warmth near the monkey, a warmth that felt like being embraced in Neville's hugs. He wanted to keep the Patronus. When the Patronus faded, Draco sighed in disappointment. But as he looked at the bright grin Neville sent him, he understood exactly where that warmth had come from.
"That was spectacular, wasn't it?"
his examiner said, voice excited and their hands clapped together for emphasis. "Yeah, he is, isn't he?" Overall, his OWLs had gone well. He hadn't been there to see McGonagall take on 4 stunners to the chest during the astronomy examination, but he had heard about it. That seemed to be the only examination that had been disturbed, at least until History of Magic. As Draco watched Potter fall to the floor with a hand clutched to his head and his mouth open in a blood-curdling scream, he knew something bad had happened. Something that would change everything. The examiner rushed forward and helped guide Potter into a sitting position, but Draco couldn't hear what had been said. It was obvious by the way Potter shook his head that he was declining further assistance, either to the hospital wing or something else. When Potter stood up and rushed out of the room, Draco wanted to follow. 10 more minutes! Do try and focus! The last remaining minutes felt longer than the full hour they had already taken. He stared down at the parchment, his eyes unseeing and not focused on the words. Had the Dark Lord done something to him? Was that possible? Was it what Potter meant when he'd been worried about the things in his head? Could the Dark Lord mess with Potter's head? Was it something that went both ways? Those were the questions he wanted to answer. Not stupid ones regarding Goblin Wars or whatever else he was supposed to be working on. "Time's up!" Draco grabbed his bag and rushed out of the room. He tried to push his way through the crowd to see if perhaps Potter had stuck around, but it didn't appear he had. It wasn't until he saw Weasley's hideous but useful bright hair that he relaxed and followed them down the hall and into an empty classroom.
"Are you all right? Are you ill?"
Granger's voice could be heard as he pushed open the door. Potter tensed, but quickly relaxed when he saw Draco. "Are you okay?" Draco asked as he ignored Granger and Weasley. He still wasn't as comfortable around them as he'd like to be. Potter shook his head as he looked between them all.
"Voldemort has Sirius."
Draco looked to the side, in time to see Weasley and Granger exchange a look.
"What?"
Granger asked finally, when the silence had stretched.
"How do you know?"
"I just saw it, when I fell asleep during the exam."
Draco furrowed his brows as his mind tried to think quickly. "You fell asleep? Actually fell asleep?"
"I would have had to. What does that matter?"
The irritation in Potter's voice was something Draco wasn't used to, but he ignored it. So then you aren't sure?
Malfoy,
Potter sighed.
No,
Grange said with a tilt of her head.
It's a valid question. All of your dreams before have happened when you were actually asleep.
Dreams? Was that why Potter had needed occlumency?
I don't know why I saw it. I just know that I did,
Potter stressed, his hands in his hair and the other fisted in his robes.
He's in the ministry. There's a room in the Department of Mysteries full of shelves covered in these little glass balls, and they're at the end of row 97. He's trying to use Sirius to get whatever it is he wants from in there. I think he's torturing him. He said he'd end up killing him.
Weasley let out a curse, and Granger looked close to tears. But Draco was only confused. Do you mean the Hall of Prophecies? Three sets of eyes looked at him, and he had to fight the urge to shift restlessly.
You know the place?
There was relief in Potter's tone, but Draco knew it wouldn't last. My grandfather, Abraxas, had a prophecy made about him. My father likes to go down there to look at it, even though he can't touch it.
What do you mean?
Granger asked, a curious glint to her tone.
Does it matter?
Asked Potter incredulously.
Sirius needs our help.
I don't think he does. Potter narrowed his eyes at Draco, and he knew he would have to choose his words carefully. Prophecies can only be touched by those who they are about, Draco explained in a rush when Potter looked upset. My father can't touch the one made about my grandfather. It doesn't matter that he's the next of kin. The spells protect against it.
So?
Potter's hands were raised in frustration, and it reminded Draco exactly why Potter wasn't at the top of their classes. If the Dark Lord is seeking a prophecy made about him, then Black can't retrieve it for him, don't you see?
What is about Sirius?
Weasley asked as he scratched his head.
Thank you, Ron,
Potter said in an overly kind manner. It's not, Draco said firmly. I used to accompany my father when he would go to the Hall of Prophecies, and my mother's maiden name is Black. The only Black that has a prophecy is Arcturus Black, who died prematurely at 58, one day after the prophecy was made.
Then Voldemort must have Sirius for another reason.
Draco had never been on the receiving end of Potter's stubborn nature, and he hated it. That doesn't fit what you said.
I know, but Sirius is there, and we need to save him.
Harry,
Grange said softly, as if she was afraid he would grow angry with her.
How would Voldemort get into the ministry without anybody realizing he was there?
How should I know?
Potter nearly shouted.
The question isn't how he got there, it's how we're getting to him.
Draco arched his brows as Granger tried to explain how that wouldn't make sense, that the ministry would be filled with hundreds of employees. It's always been empty when I've been there.
But Harry, you've never been there,
Granger said, voice still soft.
You've only dreamed about the place, that's all.
They aren't normal dreams, Hermione.
Potter's voice increased in volume, and his hands started to shake.
How do you explain Ron's dad, then? What about that? I knew what had happened to him.
Draco took a step forward as he held up his hands in a placating manner. What do you mean? You dream things? Potter jerked his head in a rude gesture of a nod. Is this why you were told to learn occlumency? Another jerk of his head, and Draco wanted to throttle him. Did you know that legitimacy can be used in dreams? Potter's anger dissipated enough that Draco could see actual concern in his eyes. If you aren't using occlumency shields in your sleep, or at the very least emptying your mind, then you are susceptible for legitimacy. Draco paused to frown, as his explanation didn't make sense. Usually, the caster has to be in the general facility, so I am unsure how the Dark Lord could have done anything unless... He cut off when the three of them shared a very telling look. Unless there's a connection, Draco finished. He knew he'd guessed correctly when Potter wouldn't meet his eyes. None of that matters. I disagree, Draco argued. If the Dark Lord can affect your dreams, then they aren't real in the context of it being a dream. He's showing you what he wants you to see, whether it's happening or not. But if he really does have Sirius, then I can't do nothing, Potter mumbled quietly.
It just seems so unlikely.
Granger added. How could Voldemort have gotten hold of Sirius when he's been in Grimmauld Place all this time? Weasley tilted his head and let out a small hum.
He might have cracked and wanted some fresh air.
But why would Voldemort want Sirius to get something that Sirius can't even get in the first place?
There could be loads of reasons, Potter exploded, hands in the air.
Draco rather thought he was grasping at nothing.
You know what?
Weasley whispered, voice awed.
I just thought of something. Sirius' brother was a Death Eater, wasn't he?
Draco's heart skipped a beat, and he felt the breath leave him in a noisy exhale.
What if he told Sirius the secret of how to get the weapon?
Don't,
Draco said. His voice came out cold, and he watched them all flinch in surprise.
Don't speak of things you don't understand.
Weasley blinked rapidly, eyes full of confusion and a frown on his face.
What are you on about?
None of this is making any sense, Granger cried loudly. There's no proof that Sirius is at the Ministry.
But Harry has seen it, Weasley argued.
No,
Draco and Granger said in unison. He gestured for her to finish.
All we know is that Voldemort has the potential to send things to Harry. For all we know, it's a ploy to get you there.
If Sirius is there, then who cares if it's a ploy as long as we can save him?
Harry said, with pinched brows as his fingers jerked against his robes in a jittery manner.
Sirius told you that there was nothing more important than learning plays your mind.
Well,
Potter yelled loudly,
and Draco found it a bit barbaric.
I expect he'd say something different now, wouldn't he?
The classroom door opened, and they all whipped around rapidly, hands trying to pull out wands.
I thought I heard Harry yelling.
Draco smiled at Luna and Neville as they entered the room.
What were you yelling about?
Neville asked curiously.
Never you mind.
Potter's tone was short and clipped. Neville arched his brows.
No need to talk to me like that. I was just wondering whether I could help.
Well, you can't.
A small frown formed on Luna's face. You are being rather rude, you know. I don't think it's an argle either. Potter swore before he turned to the side, effectively shutting her out of the group.
Wait,
Granger said suddenly.
Harry, they can help.
Draco wondered how that was possible, if Potter was too thick to listen to reason.
We need to establish whether Sirius really has left headquarters.
I told you, I saw it.
Harry, please,
Granger begged.
Let's just see if he's there before you concoct a plan to get to the Ministry.
And if he's not?
Then we'll go with you, Draco said softly. At least I will.
Potter's eyes looked up at Draco, and he knew that he had to maintain the gaze. It was important for Potter to listen.
How are we supposed to check?
Potter's eyes were still on Draco, but the question had been directed elsewhere. Draco had opened his mouth to suggest speaking with Severus, but Granger pushed forward.
We'll have to use Umbridge's fire to see if we can contact him.
He wasn't the only one whose brows arched at her gore.
We'll have to draw Umbridge away from her office, but we'll need lookouts.
She pointed towards Neville and Luna.
That's where they will come in handy.
As Neville and Luna agreed to the plan, Potter stared at the ground with his bottom lip between his teeth.
All right, we'll have to be quick about it, otherwise I'm going to go to the Ministry.
Draco rolled his eyes as he took a step forward and whispered in Potter's ear. Have a bit of faith, will you? Potter's face morphed into a grimace. I'm trying, Draco, I am, but...
I get it, he reassured, and he did. If things were reversed, I would want to go too.
I'll tell Umbridge that Peeves is smashing up the Transfiguration Department or something,
Weasley said, as he seemed to have formed a plan.
Okay,
Granger said with a finger to her chin.
We need a way to keep students away, or else a few Slytherins might tip her off.
Oi!
No offence,
she said with a wave of her hand. It did nothing to soothe Draco's ire. The offence was still there.
Luna and I can stand at both ends of the hallway,
Neville offered.
I can make up an excuse.
That only leaves Harry and me. We can go under the invisibility cloak, and we can see if Sirius is there.
Excuse me.
Draco interrupted anything else she might have said.
Two things here. One, where do I fit into this?
And two, you have an invisibility cloak?
Well,
Granger hedged nervously. I just thought... Before Draco could take offence again, Potter spoke up. I want him with us. Granger and Potter looked at each other, silently sharing something Draco didn't understand.
All right, Granger said as she stood up straighter. Let's do this.
As Weasley, Neville and Lovegood left the classroom, Potter pulled out an invisibility cloak from his bag. You are going to explain this to me at some point, Draco warned Potter.
It's going to be a tight fit, Granger said as they huddled close to each other. We aren't exactly little.
Don't worry, Granger, Draco roared as he invaded Potter's personal space. I'll just stick close to Potter. Granger snorted.
A real hardship for you.
Shut up, Potter hissed as they left the classroom and made it up the stairs to Umbridge's office. When they reached her door, Potter pulled out a small knife and Draco was surprised to see that he could pick locks. The door swung open easily, something Draco was suspicious of. After Umbridge's office had been broken into, he figured there would be some kind of spell of security. Potter knelt on the ground and threw in a handful of flu powder. Number 12, Grimmauld Place. Sirius! Potter yelled loudly. Sirius, are you there?
Who's there?
Draco stepped forward behind Harry when he recognised the voice. Creature?
It's the Potter's boy's head in the fire,
Creature said. His voice had a pleased edge to it, and that worried Draco.
What has he come for, Creature wonders?
Where is Sirius, Creature? Potter demanded. When Creature laughed, the noise resembling a croaky wheeze, Draco became alarmed.
Master has gone out, Harry Potter.
Where's he gone? Creature continued to laugh, only the sound increased in volume. Potter! Draco tried to get his attention, tried to explain that something was wrong, that house elves don't normally react like that. I'm warning you, Potter threatened Creature. What about everyone else? Is there anyone else with you?
Nobody but Creature.
The sheer glee in Creature's voice had Draco shaking his head. Potter, he tried again.
Creature thinks that he will have a chat with his mistress now that Master will be gone.
Gone? Has Sirius left somewhere? Creature! Potter! Draco yelled. He's lying! He wasn't entirely sure why he felt so strongly about it. But nothing about Creature made sense. Not the way he reacted, not the way he spoke, and certainly not his etiquette. There was a pause before Creature spoke up, Lee gone from his tone.
Who is that?
Draco Malfoy. An intake of breath caused Draco to smirk. Did my father tell you to lie? The silence that followed was triumphant in a way Draco felt as if he'd made headway out of the confusing situation. Draco could hear the sound of feet thundering outside, and he acted without thinking. He shoved Potter through the fireplace. Malfoy! Potter yelled, but anything past that couldn't be heard as the connection to Black's residence went through and the fire dimmed.
Why did you do that?
Granger asked as the door flew open as in came Umbridge and a few students from the Inquisitorial Squad, who had hands around Weasley, Neville, Lovegood, and surprisingly, Ginevra. Umbridge grinned in triumph.
You think I wouldn't have charms placed around my office after 2 break-ins?
As she looked around the room, her smile fell at the sight of Granger and Draco.
Where is Potter?
He's not here, Draco said as he tried to keep his voice even and withhold a smirk.
What do you mean he's not here?
I said he's not here. He repeated slower and over-enunciated each word. A few snorts could be heard, and Draco wasn't able to stop a quirk of his lips. Umbridge narrowed her eyes.
You know, I was worried after our last conversation. Even sent a letter to your father. He assured me that you were just going through a phase. Simple teenage rebellion. Oh, how his heart will break when he hears of this.
Draco folded his arms across his chest and shrugged. Be my guest. Maybe the shock will kill him. A low gasp could be heard, and Draco looked up to see Vincent and Greg looking at him intently. It had been years since they had a proper conversation, and he had lost the ability to know what they were thinking.
You will tell me where Potter is! Not! Fetch me Professor Snape!
The silence that settled around the room after Nott's departure was stifling. The only sounds that could be heard were the rustling of robes as his fellow housemates tried to keep Weasley, Neville, and Lovegood still.
"You wanted to see me, headmistress?"
said Severus, looking around at all the students. His eyes lingered on Neville, who was still trying to fight off the hold on him, before they settled on Draco.
"Professor Snape!"
Umbridge greeted with a wide smile that unnerved Draco.
"I would like another bottle of Veritas Serum."
Severus arched a lone brow.
"You took my full supply. The last bottle was used to interrogate Potter, was it not? I did tell you only a few drops were required."
"You can make more, can't you?"
Draco rolled his eyes. Did she know nothing about potions?
"Certainly," Severus said, as his lip curled in distaste. "Due to the potion needing to enter maturity by a solid lunar cycle, it would take a month."
Umbridge's smile fell, and her face swelled in anger.
"I can't wait a month,"
she yelled as her finger pointed in his direction.
"I just caught Malfoy and Granger attempting to flee someone, and Potter seems to be absent."
"Is that so?"
Severus looked at Draco, and he tried to jerk his head towards the fireplace in a way that would suggest the Potter had gone through, but he was never good at reading Severus.
"I'm afraid I can't help you."
Umbridge kicked Severus out of the room with a threat of suspension, as if that would have been a punishment.
"I ask you one more time, Mr. Malfoy. Where is Potter?"
Draco said nothing as he stared into her eyes.
"Very well. If you won't tell me, then I will get my answers another way. The Cruciatus Curse ought to do nicely." "That's illegal,"
Granger shrieked. Draco shot her a look as he willed Granger to shut up.
"You want to break the law. Be my guest," Draco said as he looked around the room.
"But we are all witnesses, and if you think my father would accept harm done to his only heir, then you are mistaken."
Despite their family relations, he knew his father would go after Umbridge. His position as the only heir would guarantee that. Umbridge faltered briefly as she looked at the photo of Fudge on her desk.
"Even if you use the spell on me, it won't get you anything," Draco promised. "This won't be my first time on the receiving end of it."
He ignored the startled looks from his friends. Merlin, did Granger and Weasley count as friends?
"I'll be a witness,"
Greg grunted, and Draco let out a startled exhale. Vincent grunted in agreement, and he wondered if he'd somehow missed something.
"If you harm Draco, then you harm us too."
Umbridge clenched her wand so tightly that Draco feared it would break. The majority was against her, and he knew she wouldn't overpower all of them.
"Out! Get out!"
she bellowed.
"You will all face detention till the end of term, and possibly expulsion."
Draco doubted that would hold up, but he didn't wait for her to change her mind about leaving. He grabbed hold of Granger's wrist and pulled her out of the room.
No one spoke until they were three corridors over.
"What just happened?"
"I used my brain, Weasley."
Weasley slapped him on the arm, but Draco looked behind him in the hope that Greg and Vincent had followed, but they hadn't.
"Where is Harry?"
Weasley whispered.
"Malfoy shoved him into the fireplace."
Draco glared at Granger for ratting him out.
"It was a gentle push, thank you very much."
"Does the distinction matter?"
Lovegood asked curiously, as she looked up at the ceiling.
"Yes, Malfoy,"
Granger said as her lip quivered.
"Does it matter?"
"Okay,"
Weasley interrupted.
"Back to Harry."
Draco rolled his eyes.
Creature was lying to him, and the only way Potter was going to find out if Black was there was to go in and see for himself. I just helped him along.
"It's not a bad plan,"
Neville said with a nod and a pat on Draco's back.
"At least until he shows back up,"
Granger added.
"Umbridge is going to lose it when she sees him."
"So you really think Sirius was there?"
"I do."
Draco wasn't sure why he still felt so strongly about it, but with everything he'd learned about Potter's dreams, the lack of occlumency chills, the Hall of Prophecies, and then Creature's behaviour, he was certain that Black had been there. He had to be.
"I hope you're right,"
Weasley whispered.
"If not, I'm not sure how he'll let us know about Sirius."
"It's Potter, Weasley," Draco said with a small smile. "He'll find a way."
Of that he was sure. All that was left to do was wait for him to show up. When Potter returned to the castle, It was with a level of dramatics that Drake had grown to expect. Not only had he returned during breakfast, but it was with Dumbledore, McGonagall, and three Aurors.
"What is the meaning of this?"
Umbridge screeched as she looked at the Aurors incredulously.
"Arrest this man!"
A woman with bright pink hair and an equally bright smile stepped forward.
"Afraid I can't do that, Mum. Aurors pertaining to Dumbledore have been dissolved."
Umbridge marched forward, the sound of her heels the only noise heard in the silence that stretched.
"I do, however, have a warrant for your arrest,"
the woman continued, her hair morphing into a brighter shade of pink. It almost hurt Draco's eyes to stare directly at it.
"Excuse me,"
Umbridge whispered.
"Do you know who I am?"
"It would seem that the disciplinary actions you oversaw have reached the parents,"
Dumbledore said, as he spoke up for the first time.
"Illegal blood quills were used on dozens of students, threats of the unforgivable curses, and even veritaserum on minors without their parents' consent."
With each word Dumbledore spoke, Umbridge became paler and paler until her face was ashen, and her hands trembled.
"Fudge, wait!"
"Fudge is no longer Minister of Magic,"
the Aura spoke up, a giddy smile on her face. As if it had been on cue, the Great Hall was flooded with the morning mail delivery. Draco picked up the Daily Prophet and laughed at the announcement of Fudge being sacked. The laugh left him when he saw the headline of the article underneath the announcement of a new minister. Ministry break-in. Death Eaters caught in the Department of Mysteries. Reports of a break-in came in early as last night. Aurors were tipped off by an anonymous source that Death Eaters were in the Department of Mysteries. It is still unclear what they were after. The only thing that was made clear was that they were on a mission from you-know-who. Whether that is true or not is still up in the air, but with the reappearance of several Death Eaters from the mass breakout earlier in the year, and that coupled with the darkening of the dark mark on the suspects, experts in the Aura administration have confirmed their suspicions. For nearly a year now, both Albus Dumbledore and Harry Potter have been firm with their belief that you-know-who has returned. Potter even gave a tell-all to the Quibbler, which you can see that article at the end of this one, paraphrased to show what was said on the subject. Among the Death Eaters caught were Bellatrix Lestrange, Rodolphus Lestrange, Rabazan Lestrange, Antonin Dolohov, Walden McNair, Theodore Nott Sr. and Augustus Rookwood. They all have retained counsel and refused to partake in veritaserum. The magical law enforcement refuses to give word on a date for their trial, but we remain on standby for when that will change. Amelia Bones, head of the MLE, has given a statement. More on that can be found on page 5. As for general consensus, there has been mass hysteria over the possibility of you-know-who's return. Ministry officials have urged the public to remain calm, and safety pamphlets will be sent out within the next few weeks. Continued on page 2. Draco reread the article twice, as his mind tried to piece it all together. Anonymous source? He looked up to peer at Potter. Had he been the anonymous source? Did that mean that Black had been home, and Creature had lied? He looked at Dumbledore, and was startled to find his eyes on Draco. There was an intensity there that he'd never been on the receiving end of when it came to Dumbledore.
"If you come quietly, we can move this along quicker."
"Come quietly?" The pitch to Umbridge's voice caused Draco to wince.
"I have done nothing wrong."
"You shouldn't tell lies, Professor," Potter said, as he raised the back of his hand, and several students gasped. The smile on the Aura's face didn't dim when Umbridge shook a fist at Potter. However, her eyes were cold as she pulled out her wand.
"Either way, you will end up with us. You don't want to look bad for the papers, do you?"
Drake expected her to fight, to keep spewing nonsense, but she did neither. He watched the Aurors take Umbridge out of the Great Hall. It ended up anticlimactic, really. Dumbledore clapped once in an attempt to draw everyone's attention.
"Exams are over, and Umbridge has left. I think this calls for a feast, don't you all?"
The sounds of cheers drowned out everything else. Draco smiled as he looked around the room and saw the relief on most students' faces. He looked up to see Potter staring at him in a way that had his heart beating faster than normal.
"Thank you," Potter mouthed, and Draco's smile grew wider. They would have time to talk, time to tell each other what had happened, time to explore things. Later. The time would come. But Draco wanted to do nothing except eat a feast and play Exploding Snap with Neville. They had earned it, after all.
Dear cousin, I don't know when I'll next be able to write to you. I have discovered something about the Dark Lord that has changed everything. My suspicions have yet to be confirmed, but with the information Creature provided me, I think it's safe to assume I am correct, safe to assume the worst. Have you ever heard of a ritual so dark that just the thought sours the stomach? The mere notion of such a thing as an act of evil that should never have been created. Part of me wonders if I am correct, wonders if the Dark Lord would have really descended that far from his already absent humanity. The more I consider the possibilities, the more I realize that yes, yes, he had done such a thing. If I had known what he was capable of, what kind of horrors that were before his very soul, I never would have joined his ranks. For years I have regretted my decision to join. I have wondered if things could have been different, but now I know that I needed to have done this all along. Because if what Creature has told me is true, then I must take action. I cannot sit idly by while such a creation exists in this world. If nothing is done, then the Dark Lord will come back. He will always come back. His life will never end, and humanity will be nothing but a passing memory in his new world order. It's not just a simple dark ritual. It's not something that can be overlooked. There are lines that should never be crossed. When one mutilates the soul, there is no redemption. There is no remorse without consequences. Consequences that I know he won't ever own up to. The Dark Lord has taken measure to ensure his survival too far. I can only pray that it was just the one instant. I can only hope that this is the first creation. O Merlin, help us all. I don't expect that you will hear from me for a long time, and if I can't succeed, then this might be our last correspondence. Please, cousin, take care of yourself. You are in my thoughts. Love, Regulus. Draco read the letter with trembling fingers, and he wondered if he could blame it on the vibrations of the Hogwarts Express. He stared out the window as his emotions warred with each other. It was disheartening to have come to know someone so intimately and not be able to help. He wanted to offer assistance, wanted to be able to fight whatever Regulus had fought. It confused him to care about someone he had never met. How could someone who was already dead matter so much? How did Regulus become someone he admired? Someone he thought about in times of guidance. He stared at the letter more out of habit than anything. What had Regulus meant? The clues were there, but Draco wasn't sure he understood them. Dark rituals, souls being mutilated, and an endless life. What did it all mean? Draco tried to think of the many dark rituals he'd read about, or seen his father perform, but none of what Regulus said made any sense. Nothing made sense. Draco ran his free hand through his hair as worry filled him. Was the latest letter his last one? Would he never receive another letter throughout his life from Regulus again? There was a dependency inside him that ached at the thought. His entire life had been changed from Regulus's letters. It couldn't end now. Not when he still felt like lessons needed to be learned, and paths needed to be chosen. Regulus couldn't leave his life. Not in such a confusing manner. Not when Draco still wasn't sure what had happened to Regulus, wasn't sure how his cousin had met an early departure. There was still so much to Regulus that Draco didn't know, and he wanted to get to know him, wanted to get to know the only person who could relate to Draco so well. Are you okay? Draco startled as he looked up. His eyes were blurry, and he was proud that it hadn't advanced to tears. He knew it wasn't Neville or Luna. They both had gone down the train looking for loose nargles. Draco squinted. It was hard to make out the shape of the person, but he had recognized the voice. Potter. What's wrong? Draco blinked rapidly before he looked away to wipe at his eyes. I'm fine. He didn't have to look up to know that Potter would most likely have a frown on his face. He folded the letter and put it inside his bag. You can talk to me about it, you know. Draco looked at Potter and took in his serious expression and smiled softly. I know. But I'm not ready to talk about this one. Potter glanced down towards Draco's bag as his brows furrowed. He knew that Potter was trying to figure it out, and he wished him well. You get letters a lot. Are they from your father? No. Do you know the person? In theory. And wait,
In theory? Draco laughed as Potter frowned.
Don't get a complex. I might explain it all to you one day.
Potter seemed to hesitate before he said, They haven't hurt you, have they? His heart went through another round of palpitations at the question.
Not intentionally.
But...
Potter, I'm all right.
Draco stared into Potter's eyes, and he hoped the mess of emotions inside of him were visible.
Would you tell me if you weren't? Why do you care?
Potter scoffed.
You know why I care.
He did know. Draco looked down at his hands as he thought over Potter's question. Would he tell Potter if things got bad? If he really wasn't okay, would he tell him?
I don't know if I would tell you, he admitted.
I just want to help.
I know.
And he did. Potter would always want to help others.
It's a part of your faults.
Excuse you, Potter said with a laugh.
How is that a fault? Shouldn't that be a good thing?
Maybe with other people, Draco teased.
But if it's you, then no.
That's not fair. Draco tilted until he could put his head on Potter's shoulder.
Life isn't fair.
No, Potter agreed after a beat of silence. It's not.
Why did we summon the short thread in life?
Potter chuckled, and Draco could feel it in the way his shoulders shook.
I think I heard somewhere that those who have obstacles they'll overcome in life are richer for it in the end.
What a load of rubbish. They both laughed, and Draco wanted to commit the combined sounds to memory.
What do you think will be at the end of our obstacles when it's all said and done with? Draco whispered.
Would it just be more obstacles? Would he ever have a moment of reprieve? Or would he have a chance to relax and live a normal life?
I'd like to think it'd be whatever we wanted.
We make our own future, don't we?
Sounds like a childhood fantasy.
Potter hummed.
Maybe. But why can't that be the answer? Why can't we have a fantasy ending? Because life is unfair.
There was no chuckle, no laughter, because it hit home for them. Too close to the truth.
But, Potter began, in a tone of authority, having certain people nearby can make the fact that life is unfair enjoyable.
Like friends, Draco offered, as his mind went to Neville, Luna, and reluctantly Granger and Weasley too.
And people you care about.
Something in Potter's voice caused Draco to peer up at him.
You care about me?
Potter rolled his eyes, and Draco really wondered what he'd ever seen in Potter to begin with.
You know I do.
Yeah, he had known. Draco placed his head back on Potter's shoulder and hoped that was enough. Hoped that it voiced the things he couldn't. Because Potter made Draco's unfair life bearable as well.
You've been listening to Dear Cousin, Love Regulus. Written by XX the Dark Lord, XX, and read by Reverie Pye.